the OTB Podcast Network.
Right, you're very welcome along to OTB AM this Tuesday morning. We're going to keep the days coming for you. We're as busy as a chippers and hoth on the show this morning. Owen, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Very good morning, Ger. Yeah, it's hard to keep track of the days. Thank you very much for informing us that it is indeed Tuesday.
Tuesday it is, and it's just about 7:30 for those of you who are awake at home and, you know, sitting at your breakfast table an hour and a half earlier than you normally would be because your commute has been shortened. You're rolling out of bed at around about 25 past 7 these mornings. That's my impression from how this works.
27, 28 past 7, really, at the very earliest, to be quite honest. We've just got to position the laptop just in a close enough place. Thankfully, if my house is any bigger, it might have to be 7:25.
There's literally nobody in the office today, and I'm starting to wonder what everybody does when they are here anyway. That's what comes out of this. We all start backbiting about 5 minutes in.
It's true. What do any of us ever do? Why did we ever need to be up at 5 a.m. in the morning in the first place is the question I would have. You know, we can just roll out of bed and do this thing straight away, as we do every morning, basically, anyway, don't we?
Yeah, and there's a little bit of magic to that. So there's a lot of things for us to talk about on the show today. One of our guests is Gerard O'Regan. He was tweeting yesterday about the conundrum that a lot of Irish people feel in Britain at the moment about whether or not they should bail home. And a couple of things did strike me. There was like holidaymakers arriving on the ferries yesterday with yellow regs driving off into the countryside and having the crack when they got there. I mean, not very many places to stay, nowhere for them to eat and drink, but that didn't seem to be stopping the holidaymakers, which is, you know, not great considering the UK's strategy up to yesterday was, look, it's all going to be grand. And then yesterday, obviously, it was like, it's not grand. Everybody has to go into lockdown.
It's quite a spell. I didn't actually notice it. I didn't know that there was still a lot of holidaymakers coming this way. Can they find an Airbnb to stay in? I'm sure that's going to be another problem that they might encounter over here. Like, what an unbelievable U-turn from the United Kingdom, really, isn't it? It's to go from a situation where, herd immunity is fine. It's amazing that the straw that broke the camel's back is actually scenes in Tesco, which has clearly completely bewildered Boris Johnson and has incited him to actually change his entire mind on this and kind of comes out with this almost full lockdown. Like, we've got the word lockdown gets thrown around quite easily, but if you're allowed to go outside, Ger, and do 25 minutes of one exercise, remember, per day, then is that a full lockdown is my question. I saw Dan McDonald on Twitter last night makes a very valid point that triathletes are now going to be screwed over, that they might be exempt from the one sport rule.
But that is one sport, that's the thing. So actually they benefit massively. Now is the time for everybody to become a triathlete because you can cycle. I don't know where you're going to swim. I mean, I suppose you could swim in the sea and then maybe the sea's going to be a bit cleaner, is it? Is Dollywood going to be a bit cleaner or is it actually going to be worse?
People aren't in it.
Well, it's not the people at Dollymount that's the issue, Owen. It's the human shit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
I would say that level of pollution probably isn't going to go away. I'd say air pollution is great. So maybe cycling is better for your lungs or something like this at this point. I don't know, really. Who knows what's actually good for you at this point. But yeah, like if you're a triathlete, it's clearly not the worst thing in the world. You can do all those three disciplines at a fairly safe distance from people. Anybody who's a triathlete in Ireland, I'm sure, is thriving under these conditions. But I wonder, like, what sport would you pick? If you had your 25 minutes, what would it be? Like, you can obviously try and do a bit in your back garden, but once you've got that 25 minutes of freedom, you can do whatever you want on the pavements of London or wherever you're living. It's a huge opportunity for people.
I don't know. I mean, I guess cycling. Like, that's the, you know, obviously we're kindred spirits here. Owen is a cyclist who competed in the triathlon last year. How did that go again?
Basically climbed Alpe d'Huez like Marco Pantani, really. Pantani. Like, absolute king of the mountains over here. I'm missing the mountains right now, missing the huge strain of getting to the apex and looking around and knowing that you are at a higher altitude than everybody else in the country. I miss that feeling. That's what I miss most about this whole thing.
Miles ahead, only to get the exhilaration of the breeze rolling through your head immediately afterwards, through your hair and other parts.
Yeah, I know the feeling. It's an amazing feeling.
What would you do?
I don't know, to be quite honest. It's hard to beat, even if you go as slow as I do, it is hard to beat a cycle because you do get optimum wind through your entire face and body. That is something that you can't replicate elsewhere. I can't run particularly fast, so you can't really replicate it on that front. But you've got to do something like that. You've got to wreck yourself so that's your 25 minutes done. And then you get home and you're suffering for the first half an hour that you're home because you're so wrecked from your very mild bit of exercise. So that kind of kills a full hour of your day. So it has to be something strenuous is my feeling, because what's the point otherwise? What's the point in only wasting your half an hour on just that half an hour? So yeah, a run or a cycle for me. And then, I don't know, play some sport in your own house. So like follow one of the home workouts then at that point. Go into your back garden and then do something else.
I was just about to say, yeah. So we had Joey Boland on yesterday kicking it off. We've got Andy Dunn on today. He's obviously a physio. And he's going to talk to us about a variation on some of the stuff that you might be able to do at home, some stuff that we haven't seen before or heard of before. But obviously you could just set up a goals in your back garden and play it yourself, it turns out.
You really could. You absolutely could. I'm sure that there's plenty of kids who've tried to do something like this. Obviously this video from Sarah Jane Tobin yesterday went viral of her son kicking a ball up against the wall because he's a goalkeeper. Who would have thought it, that goalkeepers would be the position that would benefit most from the coronavirus lockdown? But this is a bit of innovation from a kid. And like, Peter Schmeichel, David De Gea, all the great Manchester United goalkeepers retweeting this stuff from a Dublin garden yesterday, which was quite incredible. The amount of retweets and likes it got was
6 million
insane,
views.
Actually.
Six million views. Ben Watson didn't get any mention as a former Man United goalkeeper, as one of the ones who was always, oh, hey, Michael. Like he was actually offering like a training session or something specific, I think.
Juan Mata.
The same thing, was it?
He like offered to take a few free kicks on the kid whenever this whole thing was over.
All right.
Which, Juan Mata obviously is a great man.
He is a great man. Ben Foster.
I was thinking, well, who is Ben Watson? Obviously, it's going to be one of these moments where I'm like, you got to be older to understand that joke, Owen. I just bit my tongue there. I assumed he was before my time, Ben Watson.
Look, there's one of those jokes coming up a little later, as you know, as I told you. Anyway, one of the things that we're doing over the course of the next while is we're talking about stuff that you should be spending time on. None of this learn a language, pick up the guitar, learn a musical instrument, you know, no be kind to your fellow man nonsense or be kind to your intellect. It's sit down on your couch and watch some good quality TV. What are we watching today?
Well, we're doing our player ratings show. We're starting it today and we're rating the players in season one of Better Call Saul. So it's available on Netflix for Breaking Bad and non-Breaking Bad viewers alike. It's something that you and I have both been binging over the last little while. I think you're so far ahead of me now at this point that I'm not going to be able to catch you. But we are going to do the season by season, so I probably will have time to get through it as we do all these episodes. So we're going to focus on maybe individual films as the next couple of weeks go by, but also individual seasons. And as I say, today we're starting with Better Call Saul. So for people who are interested in watching it, perhaps join us a little bit later on. And for people who are watching it, definitely join us a little bit later on as we give our absolute correct takes, our ratings out of 10, and our player ratings descriptions on all the important players from season one of the TV show.
Right, it's 7:38 this morning. If you've got views on Better Call Saul, you can WhatsApp the show on 0879 180 180. That's the number. Or you can always drop us a WhatsApp or a tweet, rather, at Off The Ball AM or at Off The Ball. The Republic of Ireland manager Mick McCarthy says the Irish public can't take any chances with COVID-19. He says he was isolating at home prior to Boris Johnson's lockdown announcement anyway. His two neighbours have been diagnosed with the virus and he has asked for people to stay safe and stay apart. The Champions League, Europa League and Women's Champions League finals have all been postponed officially. UEFA say they've begun examining the calendar about potential rearrangements. In rugby, Simon Zeebo says he's had no contact with New Ireland head coach Andy Farrell. The former Munster back has been in international exile since his move to French side Racing 92. Zeebo says he has a very good relationship with Farrell, whether he's picked for the team or not. And he did say there was only one team that he would play for in Ireland, and that was obviously Munster. In the Olympics, contrasting views from the board of the IOC regarding the fate of Tokyo 2020 last night. Dick Powell said that the Games will be postponed, but the ramifications of that decision would need to be ironed out. But the IOC vice president, Anita de France, said no decision had been made, and it was news to her if they had been postponed. Obviously, Dick Powell's Canadian, Canada had pulled their athletes, Australia pulled their athletes, a bunch of countries are going to decide this and force the hands of the IOC, and there's obviously a bit of window dressing to be done and coordination between the IOC and their various commercial partners. So and exactly when would be refixed for, Dick Perrin was saying, 2021. The Olympic Federation of Ireland will canvass the thoughts of athletes and member associations before deciding on their potential participation in racing. There is a 7-race card behind closed doors at Clonmel this afternoon. The first is off at 2 o'clock. Here's what's coming up on the show today. We have Nathan and Sarah-Jane Tobin are going to join us to talk to us about their newfound international celebrity and what it's like to go viral from your back garden. Jarlath Regan is going to join us after 8 o'clock to talk to us about the lockdown in the UK and a few other things as well, the importance of comedy at a time like this. Andy Dunn's going to join us at around about 8.35 for our daily Off the Couch, helping you to, you know, make some sense of, to get some of the physical endorphins that you, some of the endorphins that you get from physical exercise going. This was something that Alan Quinlan mentioned on the show yesterday, just how important it is. And then we've got the player ratings for Better Call Saul, and we recorded a crappy quiz. I wouldn't watch it today. It's at 9:05 and it was completely rubbish. Owen wrote it from his home. He just doesn't have enough human contact at the moment to be able to check what's a good question and what's a fair question. And it was kind of ridiculous. I think you'll admit that now 24 hours on, right?
What does writing it from my home have to do with it? I actually write quite a lot of quizzes from my home. Well, and this should... has been, you're looking at the walls of inspiration for the greatest quizmaster in Ireland right now. So I don't understand your reference right there. Absolutely ignore Jarlath. There's like kind of a preview of sour grapes is what people are hearing. A lot of annoying whinging. There's not people whinging right now. There's people whinging about people, as you said, queuing up for fish shops. There's people queuing whinging about people who are in parks. They all have like legitimate concerns to whinge and legitimate grounds to whinge. You guys have no grounds to whinge. I can write whatever question I want and you can get it wrong, which tends to happen, and whinge about it. But don't air it to the national audience. They've got bigger things to worry about, Ger. So, you know what? I'm telling you and Nathan to just stop before it happens. This is going to be an absolute cry fest later on, as far as I'm concerned.
And the tight shot there, the walls of inspiration are a blank, white wall, kind of look like an insane asylum.
Blue sky thinking.
You need to like draw pictures on the back wall for us so that we can see that there is some brain activity still going on in your head.
Well, as I say, a blank sheet is the most inspirational thing you can possibly have in life, Ger.
Right, time for the sports pages. OTB AM. I am starting with the Irish Independent here this morning. It's 7:42 if you're listening to OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio. On the back page of the Irish Independent, leagues face axe as D-Day looms for GAA fixture list. So we're going to have a good few of these stories coming. The shape of the GAA season is likely to become clearer in the next 24 hours as the association awaits a fresh direction from the government on a probable extension of restrictions imposed on gatherings earlier on in the month. So obviously, after everybody went out and had the crack at the weekend, the government came under a lot of pressure and they are meeting today. The National Health Committee meets and then the Cabinet meets to do exactly what they're told from the original meeting. And one of the things that they're thinking about is cancelling all gatherings of more than essentially two people. So, and cancelling public parks, closing public parks and closing beaches, which is one of those, we can't have nice things because we always fuck them up. And this is one of those instances where it would be nice for us all to be able to go to the beach and walk on the beach with a bit of social distancing, but we just couldn't manage it. The instructions were too hard. We couldn't think about being 2 metres apart from each other. Mm. Great tweet yesterday about my wife said something about, not my wife, no, this is the tweet. My wife said it would just be, if you can imagine having a Niall Quinn between us in the bed. Paul Howard tweeted, yeah, my wife says not at the moment, maybe when all this is over.
Just like on the we can't have nice things situation, like there are tons of people around this country who have engaged in obtaining nice things over the last few days and have done it in a very safe manner. But there are people, and you know, granted they are very fortunate to have to live in locations where they might be near a secluded beach or a less quiet beach or near parks that aren't so public, that aren't called Glendalough or that aren't called Howth, for example, and they've been engaging in it quite well, and I'm sure that, like, the whole point about it in the first place was that people should be encouraged to get out, people should be encouraged to go and see what they've got in their locality. And unfortunately, that just goes too far. It's just, it tends to happen quite a bit in this country, unfortunately.
It's true. The other thing is that loads of the photographs that you saw people giving out about, people were actually maintaining social distance. Like, just because two cars are parked beside each other doesn't mean that everybody got out and then, like, were dry riding for 20 minutes right beside each other. There was no swapping of saliva because these two cars parked beside each other. Like, there was definitely a mad overreaction stuff, and then there was also, like, house parties and people hanging out and barbecues. The sound of barbecues wafting over the walls. You're like, really? That doesn't sound like everybody in the house lives there all the time.
But listen, when this whole thing is over, everybody now knows to go to Howth if they want a bit of dry riding, clearly. That's what the situation. The barbecues thing, like, I mean, that could obviously be, if you're just smelling that, that could be two people. But it is kind of a bit of a tease, isn't it? Saying
you've had some barbecues at the back, have you? Just making the neighbours and the recorded sound of voices. You actually play old OTB AM, so it makes it sound like Kenny Cunningham's there and Johnny Ward, Nathan.
Yeah, it's like that. That false reality is the only thing sadder than my actual real life, it seems. But so, thank you for painting that picture. It's actually not a bad idea. It's the companion that you can have in your own back garden by saying, "Hey Alexa, give me some friends," or whatever you tend to say.
A very realistic thing for us here. It's 7:46. I've got to bring you off the wall.com. Sorry, I meant to do this one first. So offtheball.com this morning. Fate finds cruel and unusual new ways of challenging Paddy Cunningham. So Paddy Cunningham is an Antrim footballer who had made a comeback to the intercounty scene after, is it 6 or 8 years away from the intercounty scene, and had played, he's 35 now, had played all of the games at the start of the league and had played really well, had been like dominating games, had been Antrim's best player. And he's done a great interview with Arthur James O'D where in the middle of it, he kind of realises, Jesus, maybe I've played my last game for Antrim, because obviously there's great uncertainty about whether or not there will be any matches later on this year. Now, we all have to live in hope that there will be some sporting activity, particularly on an island. Maybe if we lock our borders at some point and give ourselves time to get through this, then there'll be an opportunity for us to play our own sports amongst ourselves.
Mm. Well, obviously, Antrim is on full lockdown now, isn't it? It is kind of mad that a section of this island is on full lockdown and a section of this island can still go and technically queue for fish and chips if they want. But it is a fairly strange sensation, I'd imagine, thinking to yourself, God, will we ever get this back again? And like, he's obviously at the very acute end of it because of his age and that he's back after a 6-year absence. But it goes for every football player, really, and every athlete in the world at the moment, like thinking to themselves, I've got a very finite amount of time to actually achieve things in my sport. This is now taking away a good slice of that. It's obviously particularly acute if you're in the Olympic Games and you can only do this once every 4 years for people this year. But for all the GAA players, they're losing a good bit of time. All the slog that they've put in over the course of November, December, January could be for nothing at this point. So these are the different things, but it's a great piece that Arthur has done with him. Like, he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease in 2011 and has come back. Like, by all accounts, like, I haven't seen him play yet this year, but by all accounts, he's been absolutely sensational. And maybe like this could be one of the benefits of if we come back at some point later on this summer and it's a full knockout schedule, that like there could be, I don't know, a big game that Antrim are involved in that's knockout that could be televised, and that all kind of television rights are off the table, and that everything is televised and everything is shown, and we see a little bit more of these teams. There could be a potential byproduct of all of this, as much as we don't know at the moment, but it's a great piece and we're checking out right now on offtheball.com.
Yeah, okay. And sorry, Colm Key's piece about the leagues is a suggestion that the start of the championship is supposed to start on the 9th and 10th, that weekend of May. That looks like a deadline that's now going to be impossible to meet. They're going to shelve the leagues with the exception of some promotional relegation in the lower tier hurling, and that there'll be another conference with County Board Chairman later on today.
What have you got the Irish Daily Star this morning, Tokyo No is the headline. Olympics set to be rescheduled, but stars blast IOC dithering. 2020 Olympic Games set to be postponed due to COVID-19 crisis. Heffernan slams IOC for leaving competitors in limbo. And Kelly Harrington says people's health must come first with the Games. We had her on the show as well yesterday morning. You can check out her quotes on offtheball.com. Dick Pound basically coming out yesterday to say that the Games will be rescheduled till 2021. FAI Ford split on Boss. Meanwhile, this is Paul Lennon, and he's got an exclusive that there is no clear consensus amongst the FAI board over whether Mick McCarthy should stay in charge of Ireland if the team reaches the Euros next year. So his contract with the association expires on July 31st, with Stephen Kenny then scheduled to take over. But this obviously changes everything because of the fact that the Euros are kicked back and the potential, of course, for Ireland to qualify via a playoff. So no clear decision or no clear leaning at the moment from the FAI board, it seems.
Mick McCarthy is of the opinion that he should remain as manager for the finals, so honouring the intention of the deal he agreed with the FAI in November 2018, if not the letter of it. However, Kenny is adamant that he will step up from his current role as under-21 Supremo on August 1st. And he enjoys support amongst a number of the 11 members of the FAI board. Are the details of that. So how do they wrestle? What happens? Is it like is it a penalty shootout? What do we do? How do we separate this?
Very good question.
FIFA? Mick plays long ball Ireland and Kenny plays pass.
Good shout. So what it's going to be is that it is going to be FIFA, but Mick McCarthy goes into the room first, picks his team, sets up his tactics, leaves the room. Stephen Kenny comes in, sets his team, changes his tactics, whatever. And then they just simulate the game. They don't actually play. They simulate the game. And whatever way the FIFA players carry out their instructions best, and whichever manager's instructions actually allow these robots to perform the best, actually gets the Ireland job. I think that's a fair enough way of doing it.
Nil all draw goes to penalties. I mean, that's exactly what happens. No chances, no corners, no free kicks, nil all draw. No, actually, that's not what happens. Kenny's team wins 3-0.
It might do. I've certainly seen people park the bus in FIFA before. When I say see people, I've done it myself. And it's actually not the most unsuccessful tactic in the world. It can happen. It can happen in real life, so therefore it can happen in FIFA. So I wouldn't write Mick McCarthy's simulation team off just yet. I think he might actually have a chance in that. The Mirror this morning, a couple of football stories. No fans, no way. Premier League and EFL players will revolt against matches behind closed doors.
Why?
So this is a John Cross exclusive. And Mirror reported that fans, players from all levels of the game are against matches being resumed without any fans because of the coronavirus. They've voiced major concerns to the PFA after both the Premier League raises a strong possibility last week. So, like, is this not the same point that Rooney was making last week?
But at that stage, it's different, right? At that stage, we know a lot more, right? We're not talking about in 2 weeks' time. Are we?
No, it would be when things are safe to resume. But
May the 2nd, as early as that.
Is it like since we've kind of come down the slope quite slowly, I would have thought, haven't we, in terms of kind of semi-lockdown, full lockdown? I'm talking about the UK here, obviously. Like, do you go back up the way a lot quicker, or what do you do? Like, do you go to a situation where you are playing games behind closed doors, and then a few weeks later you're playing games in front of full stadiums? How does that work? Like, we don't know, but I would have thought that it's going to be everything back at a quicker pace than the way it went the other way. No,
I don't know. I think that it'll be graduated slow. Like, if you think about what's happened in Wuhan, and again, they've slowly gone back to, but there's social distancing still. Like, and there's a significant concern that there'll be a comeback of the virus when people get a bit lax and complacent. So I can't see there being big crowds at any point until August, September, if we're lucky. But could be wrong with that.
The huge swathes of money existing in the game obviously need to go into making that a possibility. Because speaking on a purely selfish level for all sports fans, that would be an amazing thing to have at some point in a few months' time. That even if there is wide concern about the virus making a second wave or whatever it is, that you do have almost quarantine sets of players who can be fully tested, can be fully seen to be fit to go out to a football pitch without any threat to their own livelihoods or to the livelihoods of their family, and then be able to engage in it. When you have a controlled amount of individuals like that, it might be possible, given the amount of money at football's disposal. But this is something that we can't really consider for quite some time, really, given how much the health service is going to be under pressure over the next few months. It's a huge luxury to have if we get to that point in a few months' time.
Yeah. And look, we absolutely need to see exactly how everything pans out, particularly as the surge hits. So go on.
Just another story there from the back of the mirror. Rio Ferdinand says Liverpool should lose the league title, and it's not because I'm a Man United fan. It is now about life or death. So he reckons that the season should be scrapped, which will infuriate Jurgen Klopp, says the Mirror. And then you've got coronavirus wrecks three more events. That's the Olympic dream is over. And then you've got the Europa League and the Champions League both set to be postponed indefinitely.
The Irish Examiner, their front page is a column from Micheál Quirk. Securing right result against a shared opponent is now our priority. He says that there'll be no collective training. They're absolutely obeying all the rules, and you know, there's individual programs happening, but ultimately none of that matters at the moment. And it's a good piece here at the referees will need access to county training to stay sharp, says O'Dwyer. So Paul O'Dwyer is the leading hurling match official, and he wants referees to have the opportunity to referee inter-county training sessions, which we know most inter-county managers would like to have, because it builds a relationship between high-profile referees and your team. The Dubs would do that over a long period of time. Irish AFL players facing uncertain times. So a bunch of them have flown home immediately, but there's a good line here from Morris Brosnan in Melbourne. In Sydney, Derry GWS Giants star Callum Brown couldn't leave the country. That was because he recently lost his passport and had to source an emergency one. With airlines grounding flights and others like Emirates suspending passenger operations as of tomorrow, it means the next available flight for him is Thursday. I had a decision to stay or go. I just thought of mum back home, everywhere closing. She needs support, my little brother, and that, said the 19-year-old. Can you imagine being 19 in Australia? Global pandemic strikes. You've effectively lost your job for now, and your passport is lost, and you're trying to get home. I can only imagine the homesickness that he's feeling at the moment and how far away Australia must feel. You know, we constantly talk about how communications makes the world seem pretty small, and the global ebb and flow of Irish people probably does mean that there are people in the locality, but I've no doubt Colin Brown's feeling a little bit lonely at the moment.
Mm. It's mad, really, that we were sitting here a week ago actually talking about the AFL season potentially starting. That it's gone from that position where there was football going to happen, granted, in front of closed doors and in front of no crowds, to a point where people are actually struggling to get home, because there's multiple stories outside of sport like this as well, where airlines just aren't flying out of Australia anymore, and people are almost trapped in that side of the world, where I guess in this part of the world it has been kind of a slower descent, as I've already mentioned, and it almost serves as an implicit warning to people to go get to where you want to be for a potential lockdown. But it seems that in Australia a few people are going to get trapped, and I know it's been obviously the case in South America for very different reasons. The Racing Post I've got next, the back page says flame going out on Olympic dream, Tokyo Games to be moved from July start. Like, this, I guess everybody's taking it as fact, really, this morning. We should say that it hasn't been confirmed yet. Like, Dick Pound is as authoritative a voice as you can get on something like this, though, so it probably will be the case, and it should be confirmed very shortly. But we should say that it actually hasn't been confirmed just yet, that it has been pushed back. So something you'd expect in the coming days. They've given themselves 4 weeks, but really at this point you'd imagine that Jenga Tower is going to fall on the people who really wanted to see the game start in July.
Yeah, so that is definitely going to be the end of that. There's a story, Kieran Fallon defeated by supermarket panic buys on the front. Kieran Fallon went to Tesco in Bury St Edmunds around 7 a.m. Everything appeared quiet. Before I knew it, people just appeared like locusts, and there was nothing left that anyone wanted. I've never seen anything like it. Certainly not like that in Dubai, so it was a bit of a shock to the system. I then tried to call into a nearby Aldi on the way home, but they were queuing out the door at 7:30. I managed to get some supplies in Newmarket Tesco on Saturday morning when it appeared to quieten down a bit, but there was no pasta and baked beans are scarce. So, Kieran Fallon is just back from Dubai and didn't realise that panic buying a go-go in the UK at the moment. I have the London Times next. Do I have the London Times next? What's next? Racing Post, the Mail. Sorry, the Mail is next. I got the Irish Daily Mail here for you. Olympics off, fairly straightforward. Headline from them, IOC postponed games until next summer. So summer 2021 is what they're saying. There's a picture there of Rob Heffernan and his coach. Sorry, Rob Heffernan with two race walkers, David Kenny and Brendan Boyce training in Fota Island. Just in the, maybe there's a depth perception issue. They're a bit close to each other, aren't they?
Notice it myself.
Are they a bit close to each other?
Am I the only person who is now watching everything and thinking to myself,
Don't shake his hands.
Yeah, in every single walk of life. What classic game club were we doing yesterday? Jerry, you were on
2014.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, God, it's been a long 24 hours. I saw an elderly man sitting beside somebody in the 2014 All Ireland hurling final while watching it back, and I was like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Oh wait, sorry, that was 6 years ago. This is not happening in the present." And like, you see people like when I was watching Better Call Saul, handshake when he walked into the boardroom. I'm like, "What are you doing? Yes. What are you doing? Don't shake his hand."
Yes.
And it's like, "Oh wait, hold on a minute. This is fictitious."
On Friday morning. Last at 9 o'clock in the morning, the Aussie rules season kicked off, and you know they had the Bannon handshake, so they were continuing to tackle. But then after at half time, they're all like high fiving. You're like, ah, lads, like maybe they wanted it to be suspended at that point. Maybe they're like, look, let's do whatever we can to make this be the end of it, because I don't know.
Do you ever think that you've shaken a hand for the last time?
I mean, it's possible. I hear people saying it's all going to go back to normal, but like, it's going to go back to normal once we get a vaccine and once everybody gets a vaccine. But I do think that people are going to be much more cautious about everything, because if COVID-19 has proved to be so dangerous and so difficult for everybody to deal with around the world, what's to stop the next variation being so difficult and dangerous and it not being something that we have a vaccine for too? So, I wouldn't be very surprised if a lot of the casual touching that happened in the world is gone.
It's that's disappointing. Who was the last? What was the last hand you shook then? That's kind of the obvious follow up question here.
I don't know. I mean, Kenny Cunningham was in the office a couple of weeks ago, and Tommy shook his hands, and I was like, "Oh, Tommy."
Scenes. Yeah, this was that was certainly the last handshake I've witnessed in real time. But the last one I've actually enjoyed, I don't know, but it's emotional to think that could be a thing of the past. The Daily Telegraph this morning, I've got, I might give the Guardian to you, Ger. I've got the flame goes out is the main headline here, with a photo of somebody in front of the Tokyo 2020 logo. And finals of Champions League and Premiership plans to complete Europa League. Finals of Champions League and Europa League called off by UEFA. And then a separate story, Premiership plans to complete season without delaying 2020-2021. So another bit of ambition being shown by a sporting organisation there.
Paul Hayward, the headline in his piece, Team GB can be NHS team in Tokyo. And this is... GB Olympians can show our debt to heroes of NHS in Tokyo 2021. I understand the sentiment, and I know that people are looking for ways to somehow tie what's happening in the world to our own jobs and to make our stuff relevant. But like, obviously the Italian team is going to feel the same about representing their health service, and the American team and the Irish team and the Tokyo team and the Japanese team and if there are any Hong Kong athletes. Like, the whole notion that somehow the athletes then are burdened that their victory will be representative, or their defeat, which is most likely, because more people lose than win, is somehow a stain on or a reflection of their relationship with their health service. Like, no. The Olympics are going to be a glorious distraction and an opportunity for us all to go, we're coming together to watch some sport, as opposed to this is a representation of how well we're going to do to work for the heroes of our health system, because the heroes of the health system are the same in every country around the world. All of them barely scraping together enough equipment to protect their own health, and burdening athletes with the notion of representing them and just the NHS. I don't know. I'd be staying away from that kind of stuff for now.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting as well to see the varying degrees of release that is going to come in a few months' time as well. I don't mean in the Olympics or whatever it is. Like we were saying last week, that imagine the first Serie A game when fans are actually in the ground. It is going to be incredible. And so the same goes for La Liga as well, after all the hardship that they're going to go through, that they're already obviously sustaining over the last few weeks. That I think that moment when people come together, and in a country like that, I think it'll be quite obvious, all right. I think here it'll be a bit different. I think obviously we don't wear our heart in our sleeve as much as, say, the Italians and the Spanish do, but I think there'll be kind of like a quiet satisfaction, a quiet release to, you know, being able to do something simple like going to a match with your mate or a family member or something like that. So I think that's probably where the release will come from. I think saying that people are going to be representing their health service is probably a step too far.
The London Times, their back page headline, Olympics set for 2021, and a picture of one of the curlers who is joining the virus fight. And then rugby aims to be on TV first. So rugby's premiership chiefs were apparently under criticism for being slow acting, but now they've responded like Boris Johnson, and they want their competition to be the first sport back on TV. They're determined to finish the season, even if it means playing summer doubleheaders in empty stadiums and clashing with England's tour to Japan. Nothing's going to clash with England's tour to Japan, because England's tour to Japan is not going to happen. Ireland's tour to Australia is still technically on, but that's not going to happen either. So they're going to try and play rugby in the summer behind closed doors. If it's safe to do so and everybody says, yeah, let's go for it, and it's not going to put any extra strain on the health service, then putting stuff on, getting people, reminding people about how we're going to get back to life, using it as an advertising platform to tell everybody to maintain social distancing and wash your hands.
Trying to battle to become the first sporting organisation back post-coronavirus is the most needless thing ever. Like, they allow them to like do an arm wrestle or whatever sort of macho man contest they want, but trying to, you know, measure themselves by how quick they get back after coronavirus is patently ridiculous.
All right, 087-9180-180 is the WhatsApp number. Just add the contact there, OTB, and you can send us whatever you want, just no filth. I mean, it's a bit late in the day for that, but I probably should have said that first. 6 minutes past eight here this morning. We're going to take a quick break. We're back with internet sensation Nathan Flanagan after this.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station. Off the Ball, 2019 IMRO Radio Awards Sports Programme of the Year.
Salah takes a shot.
Cedar dreams turn into reality. Whose names will be etched in history forever?
Offtheball.com, best online publisher at the 2019 Spider Awards.
A big breaking story on offtheball.com for you this morning. We have the very latest on the Mayo leaks. We now know what went on in that secretive Mayo County Board meeting.
2019 Irish Sponsorship Awards Best Radio Sponsorship, OTB Super Value GAA Roadshows.
Well, Pentagon's back, get your arse back here, he said. Star is out sitting on the swing and Darren O'Sullivan is pushing him.
OTB Sports Radio, live, online 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
This is OTB Sports Radio. OTB AM.
Oh.
Oh, he saved it.
Right. Nathan, good morning to you. How are you doing?
Morning.
How are you getting on as a global celebrity? What's it like?
Different. Completely different. I went to bed at 3 million. People saw it, now 6
million. 6 million. And it's just getting bigger and bigger. Come here. So your mum is sitting there recording it. And does she record your football often? Like, is this something that she's a proud ma go and listen just in case something good happens? Always a journalist, obviously.
Yeah, but she does, but like she usually gets like not like 6 million views, she gets like 100, not like, you know, loads of players saying that. Yeah, incredible.
Who do you support?
Leeds.
Right. Have any of the Leeds players seen it that you know yet? Just
I'm actually not sure.
All the Man United ones have. Are you like, yeah, whatever, Man United? Or
yeah. that kind of sort of thing.
So it was David De Gea, it was Peter Schmeichel, it was Ben Foster. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's crazy. Peter Schmeichel, as you said, so many people. So, incredible.
What was the first one that you kind of went, hang on a second, what's going on here?
Peter Schmeichel.
Right. And you're obviously quite young. Do you know anything about Peter Schmeichel's career?
I know he played for Man United. I know he was a huge player back in the 90s. So that's like Casper's dad.
Yes, of course, Casper. Hi, Sarah Jane. How are you?
Hi, I'm all right.
A bit mental.
My phone didn't stop buzzing all night, so I haven't had much sleep.
Do you know why? Like, do you know why everybody's kind of
like? I think coronavirus fatigue. We were just talking about this in the newsroom. Everyone's kind of just so worried and so anxious, and at the same time, we just have to get on with it. So I think people are kind of looking for little ideas, little inspirations, and I think Nathan has become one of them. That, you know, it doesn't matter that we're all locked in the house; we can still do things that we love, and it doesn't matter. It'll be over in a few weeks, and we'll be able to catch back up then. So.
Yeah, and I think as well it was like we all kick balls off walls as kids, but there was an intensity. Nathan's practicing. This is like proper serious practice, Nathan. You're not slipping. You're like, oh, gotta keep going.
Yeah, well, to be honest, it's just I got running with my dad. We work on like fitness and things. So last few days I've been in the background practicing. So it's kind of different.
Nathan, you're going to have to take Juan Mata up on his offer. I saw that he offered to take a few free kicks. And is that something that you're going to look to make happen?
I have to.
Have you got any other goalkeeping drills? Because that one looked pretty intense. It seems that you've got it down. You could almost coach a few other goalkeepers for people looking for tips and that are in isolation over the next few weeks.
Well, I kind of work on my handling and that kind of stuff.
It's his dad to throw stuff at him.
Yeah.
When he's not on his own, he gets someone to throw things at him and he tries to catch it and jumps. A lot of jumps, isn't it?
Yeah.
And who do you play with, Nathan? What's your team? What team do you play with?
Oh, Ballyoster.
Right.
Their team is Elridge, under 12s.
As a matter of interest, how did you end up being a goalkeeper? Why did you want to be a goalkeeper? Who's your inspiration?
Nobody wanted to be in goal, and nobody just volunteered. So I was like, sure, why don't I try it? And then
he's been a goalkeeper since he was five.
Right.
So I was only a kid though, so really young.
So you've nearly got your 10,000 hours. Like this is fate now. we wish you the very best of luck. And it seems like you're doing pretty well with the social isolation. This is not a bother to you.
It's
okay.
Well, listen, congratulations on going viral. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. And stay safe.
Bye.
See you guys.
Bye.
Pretty amazing story. I think Owen, everybody looked at it and went, yeah, I remember doing a bit of that. That's cool. And then also, actually, he was just doing a slightly better than version of it than our best selves, I think.
Yeah, and also because he's a goalkeeper, people use the ball when they were a kid because they're like, look how good I am at sweetly striking the ball up against the wall, where he was like, I'm going to put myself through the paces here. As you say, it's a drill. He's doing a drill, whereas the rest of us, I was like, yeah, let's just play around here a small bit. It's not surprising at all that it took on such a life of its own yesterday, that people are looking for bits and pieces like this to kind of show how people are beating the coronavirus. And if it's a kid who's shown a bit of enterprise, then all the better.
Yeah, totally. 087-9180-180 is the WhatsApp number if you want to get in touch with us this morning. Charlotte Regan's going to join us live from London next to chat about the UK lockdown. But first, watch Joe Malloy sweat as he gets an impromptu music test from football muso Pat Nevin.
I've been meaning to put things up on my wall in the background here for a long time that are kind of better than a big map over there.
Yeah.
So I got albums and, you know, covers for albums and kind of put them up in frames. So as you will see, you probably know that one. I'm going to test you now.
Don't do that to me.
Can you not see? You must know who that is.
Yeah, we got that. Okay, Heroes, David Bowie, check.
Okay, So I've got.
This is about to get very embarrassing for me. So thank you for that.
Yes, excellent. Next one. Oh, it's because it's all right. There's a reason why it's all right. That's actually quite a hard one, maybe.
It looks like a Monet or something like that. What? Who?
It's probably not close enough. Anyway,
Proclaimers.
Associates sulk. Okay. Then it gets a little bit weird and a bit strange. So I'll save you that.
All right, okay.
I'm trying to think if there's anything that the general populace will get. So doing all that sort of stuff, you'll never get. If you get that, you get 100 points if you get that. Well done. I don't even know if you can see it with the light.
I can see it well enough to, if I knew what it was, I could tell you, but I don't know.
Good. Right, so my favourite band, the Cocteau Twins. So like everyone, things that you put off for a long, long time, I've been doing that. So, and it is one of those things where, you know, certain books that you wanted to read, yeah. You know, certain movies that you thought, right, that's a DVD in the back of the cupboard that I'll watch one day. You just get round to doing it. There's a million and one things you can do. And also, if in the community here, there's things being set up to help, and we're all putting our names forward here that we can do certain ways that we can help. And whatever it is, you know, particularly the elderly community, it's quite an elderly community around where I live, so a lot of us are putting our names forward and saying, right, when you need us, give us a shout. Mm. We're here. And it's nice. Small communities are like that. I mean, I'm sure you've got that all the way through, you know, most of Ireland, but particularly rural Ireland. Mm. You will get that, and you get that very much in rural Scotland as well.
Pat Nevin speaking with Joe Malloy last night. We're saying good morning to Jarlath Regan. Jarlath, how are you getting on?
How are you doing? Yeah, hanging in here.
How's the head?
The head's good. I mean, it's, the head is melted. The natural response is to say the head's good. Actually, everything's grand. But yeah, no, the head's properly melted at this stage.
Yeah, I can see why. I think everybody has had the existential dread creep up on them slowly. And there are definitely times when it runs uncontrollably, and you kind of have to go, okay, hang on a second. Need to tell, I'll take big deep breaths here. Certainly that's been my experience. I don't know what yours has been like. And particularly in the UK, where it just seemed like for the last 2.5-3 weeks, the government was really struggling with what its policy was.
Really, really, really mixed messages. And that's been the really troubling part for us as a family, because obviously my wife is immunocompromised and in the high risk category. And, you know, so we were on it quite early. And we were, you know, saying to friends and co-workers, this is legit, this is real, we should be concerned. But it wasn't helped, because they turn around to you and go, but Boris says, and you're like, yeah, I have a feeling Boris is not going to be saying that next week. And then that proved to be the case. I mean, you had him standing up there not too long ago going, everybody should just, you know, go around and shake hands. And I shook hands with all the people in the clinic where there were people with coronavirus. And you're like, you've no idea the impact that has on people. You've no idea. I think that Irish people have much more skepticism towards leadership and the man in the suit. We don't see him as an authority. A lot of ways we see that's just another, that's me in a different life. Whereas if Boris says, yeah, keep going to the pub, if Boris's dad says keep going to the pub, it confuses things, and that's what's happened here.
Why do you think that is, Jarlath, that Irish people and English people, sorry, people across the UK seem to have this different view of leadership? Is it a byproduct of Brexit, or is it something that Brexit actually just showed up and underlined more clearly than ever?
It's much more historical than that. Obviously, it's a complete psychological, historical ingrained version of legitimacy, power, and consent that, you know, varies from country to country. But I certainly took a lot of what was being said with a pinch of salt, and even now. You really get the sense that there is no exit strategy. That's the really concerning bit. So last night I went on Twitter and I asked people, am I the only Irish person here who's thinking I should bail out? This pre-Boris's speech at 8:30 in the evening. And, you know, the response was insane. The response was overwhelming, that you're not alone, and that a lot of Irish people over here are feeling that now's the time to bail. But the concern then is that riskier? Is that more self-concerned than anything that you could do, first of all, for the probability that you could contract it in transit, and also the probability that, you know, you could spread it, perhaps, that you're not showing signs yet. So after a long, long Twitter debate and poll, there was kind of 50-50 people saying, no, get out. A lot of people from around the world saying to me, if I could, I would. But I think when you're put to the pin of your collar then, and you realize that, you know, airports, taxis, all of this is, you're doing the opposite of what you're being told if you do that. You're doing fully, you're flying in the face of the recommendation. That is not essential travel. You have a home here, a safe place, and you should hunker down.
Yeah, I can totally see both sides of it. I can see how if you're in a place where it looks like something horrific is about to happen, because essentially the policy 2 weeks ago was, let's get everybody to get herd immunity. And, you know, the stuff at the weekend where Cummings was exposed as somebody who was espousing that in the Sunday Times was shocking/not shocking at all, because that was certainly what the public pronouncements had been up until very recently. Like, oh, herd immunity was never part of our deal. It was like, well, actually it was. And, you know, there's loads of reporting that has proven that it was. So that U-turn happened. And I can see how you'd be scared in the middle of that, particularly in the scenario that you've outlined. I think if people had a place where they could come home and self-isolate for 14 days, I can absolutely see why you would, you know, because I don't think you're probably not that much of a risk to other people. If you can make it home and you can be on your own for 14 days, then I can see it. It is, of course.
I mean, it goes without saying, these are things that we never thought we'd face, and discussion that I never thought I'd come on Off the Ball and have. But you are talking about life and death, because you're coming back to elderly relatives. Like, that's obviously where I would stay. And then it's like, well, I would have to self-isolate for 14 days if I came back. Just like all the lads coming back from Cheltenham, I assume, did to every single one of them. Right? Right, guys?
Yeah, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's very worrying, and it's also time for me to use what I can with Irishmen Abroad to kind of what I've been doing with the podcast is trying to calm people and do what I can to communicate with the people we've had on in the past who have survived great adversity, awful situations, come through stuff, and maybe have a bit of advice as to how to get through something you think you can't.
Resilience is obviously something that we're going to need in spades to get through this. And it's the uncontrollable nature of what's going to happen and what is happening that I think is the thing that freaks most people out. Most scenarios in your life, you somehow have cause to happen, or you are trying to influence your way out of it. And you can at least put a plan in place. For this, it's like, just don't go out, don't speak to anybody, wipe everything down that you come in contact with, and hope that somehow this virus, which no one really knows enough about just yet.
It's the not knowing, right? It is completely the not knowing that is upsetting to people. And, you know, over here, I don't want to badmouth every English person I've come into contact with. That said, there's an ignorance everywhere in Ireland as well, exhibited this weekend, as to how I'm above this, and that, sure, I think I'll survive this. And we were laughed at for a long time, sanitizing and spraying things down, myself and my wife. Those people, many of them have subsequently apologized to us. And other, you know, comics that I had met along the way who said, I think I can handle it. And it's not about you. That's what I kept saying. But the not knowing, as I said, that's the thing that's they're obviously going to struggle with now that they've gone into lockdown. I feel that if you send a guy, if you send a guy home from work early, he's happy. But if you tell a guy to go home from work early and stay at your house until I say so, he'll go crazy in the first hour. You want certainty as to, yeah, but when can I do this? When am I in control of this? It's that not knowing that will probably lead to, I believe, a backlash in a short period of time. And that's why when he says something like 12 weeks, and Boris comes out and says 12 weeks, we can have this virus packing, you really don't have anything to back that up. And that's an unfair promise to make people, because you can be guaranteed that there's people ticking down their calendars going, that's all it is, kids, 12 weeks, and then we'll definitely be going on our holiday to Spain. That's just too big of a promise. But he's nearly backed into a corner where he has to, because that's every article that comes up now, even on the BBC website, is when is this going to be over? Mm. And nobody has an answer.
I think Marina Hyde made the parallel between that line and the it's going to be over by Christmas line from the past as well. Charles, if you don't mind me asking, how is your wife and how have the last couple of weeks been?
She is a Celtic warrior. She is an unbelievable inspiration in terms of her mentality and attitude. She's come through an awful lot worse. She's been in very hairy situations in terms of her own health. And right now she's healthy. We're extremely concerned about bringing it into the house, and she's fully not leaving the house whatsoever, and just focused on, like, you know, I we're allowed to go out for one bit of exercise now. That's what Boris said, and that's what my son and I, Mikey, have been doing, is we go and shoot hoops on the local basket for an hour each evening. And you know, just trying to get him and all of us to focus on one day at a time. It sounds so silly that, like, even saying these words is mad, but you are going, look, right, being present, being actually present in, well, where are we now? Well, right now, sitting in a warm house with all these creature comforts and a local shop down the road, just being present in and not going forward, getting past and ahead of yourself, because that's where anxiety lies. And everyone I've spoken to on the podcast in the last few weeks comes back to that, whether it's Mary Robinson or Owen Colfer or Enda McNulty, each of them has said just coming back to center and being where your feet are right now, because if nobody knows, what's the point in going there?
Yeah, like, tools for coping are definitely going to be very important in all of this. And I think I'm coming to work, we're doing the show, there isn't a whole heap of sport to talk about, but we felt that it was an important thing to kind of have some sense of normality for as many people as possible. And it's exactly the same with an Irishman abroad. Like, there'll be a little notification in whatever podcast app people use, and content will arrive. And that's your job. Like, it's your job to keep going and keep doing that and try not to be as anxious on air as you might be in real life, but also to somehow reflect the anxiety at the same time, to kind of show that, look, we're all in this together.
Yeah. And the show is, you know, nearly 350 episodes old. Irishman Abroad is approaching 400 episodes, 7 years. Every single Sunday, without fail, we haven't missed a Sunday in the 7 years. And each time, as you say, Ger, I don't come on and put on the face. If that's where I am, that's where I am. And I bring that. And I think I bring the honesty of what I'm living through, because I think that loads of Irish people abroad are living through similar experiences. And you're not on your own. And you can feel very alone abroad. It can feel like when you're talking to your people back home, that they just don't understand how isolated you can feel. And it's only others that are away can understand that ache. And each episode now is walking us along through that path and figuring out, well, maybe talking to Ramesh Ranganathan this week will help. And it certainly made me laugh. And next week it'll be somebody else, but it's a kind of an ongoing conversation in many ways. And yeah, the truth wins out.
And it's all about change. So, like, we're all grappling with the, like, when it's safe to do so and sport comes back, should they bring it back as early as they possibly can and play it behind closed doors? Or is the whole point about getting communities together, and do you then have to have social distancing in all the world's great stadiums? So it's like two empty seats, one person, two empty seats, one person. What is that experience going to be like? And I was thinking as well about the importance of comedy. Obviously, you can deliver comedy to an audience technologically now in a much easier way than it was before. But maybe the great stand-up venues of the world are going to be very different places for the next number of years until we all get immunized against this, either through vaccination or until herd immunity does actually happen.
Yeah, and I'm hearing those conversations and I'm in those conversations about what happens next. As you say, technology can allow us to, and many comedy clubs, such as the Stand Comedy Club in Glasgow, started streaming shows where they just bring the acts in. But, you know, it's an intimacy. There's an intimacy to comedy. So even if you say two seats either side, which hard to imagine that working, it's about the togetherness of the event. There's like that's where the magic lies in it. And it's kind of an indefinable thing why comedy works. Like, why does this work? We know that part of it is the same pagedness of it, that we're all in this together. Right now, I don't think a lot of promoters, bookers, and clubs they're very scared, because if you think about it, the plug is pulled entirely there. All of these self-employed people, there's been nothing from above to say, here's how you're going to be looked after. Virtually nothing. That's grotesque. And Sarah Pascoe and Richard Herring have set up a crowdfunding page, which has raised £50,000 to help comics through this period. But I know that you talk about the importance of comedy, but there's a great sense, I'm sure you feel it too, that your thing, the thing that you devoted your life to, is so expendable and so throwaway. It's such a luxury item. And you're suddenly reminded of that when we're going through the list of things that can go, a line goes through yours right away. And that's hard. And that's been hard for a lot of my friends to take. And I guess I am blessed that I have the podcast, and I've built that for years. But, you know, our sponsor disappeared overnight. Our sponsor was great for years, but they're gone now. And it's the public and the Irish abroad that have stepped in on Patreon and have signed up and allowed us to keep the lights on.
Yeah, I'm not sure that what you do, we can just stick a line through. I think that people need escape. When things get really grim, people are going to need a way of going. So we were talking earlier on with the kid whose video went viral, kicking the ball in the back garden. His mum actually works with us here. And 6 million views. And like, we were asking, why did this take off? It didn't take off because of anything other than we all could see ourselves a little bit going, yeah, I've done that, except this guy's actually doing a better version of it. And also, it wasn't the news. It was something separate and other from the chaos of the coronavirus and the relentlessness of every single story being a death toll, a number increasing, an exponential graph, and the fear that comes from that, the tens of thousands of jobs gone yesterday in the fast food industry. So I would argue that now more than ever, we need your comedy and we need your colleagues' comedy.
When I say to put a line through it, I guess I mean in terms of the live performance end of it, where 90% of us make our bread. And now it forces all of us to be creative and come up with new things. And as you say, deliver comedy in a new method, in a new form, because certainly there's a want and a need for it. That adversity is usually through which creativity and great sporting excellence emerges. There's a reason why boxers come from disadvantaged communities, and there's a reason why comedians come from really dark places, because they have to find it. They have to find it there. And I'd imagine that in years to come, we'll look back and look at this absolute bottleneck of great creativity that was forced out of all of these people that had their livelihoods taken away.
Yeah, I really hope so, because we could do with the distraction. I have two quick things that I want to ask you about here at the end. The first one is technology. Like, is there an app that will allow 1,000 people to watch a comedy streamed event that the sound is low enough we can hear them laugh but not hear them talking?
Do you mean so that they would sit at home?
Yeah, so we're all sitting at home. You're delivering. There's 1,000 people, and it's it's like Zoom, except I don't know if you've had a Zoom call where there's more than three people on it, but the feedback is like, okay, could everybody just mute their mics there, please, for a minute, and so we can actually...
Oh, isn't it?
Yeah, we had one.
There's no such app, because basically what you're doing there is miking every single person in the crowd. So from the perspective of every single member of the audience disturbing everyone else,
the hecklers.
I mean, it's like playing Fortnite with the people saying stuff constantly. It's a funny one, because I guess you could watch any of these streamed shows, such as the ones that Paul Curry has been doing or Kevin McGahern, with friends. You can do that and link up with friends who you know will shut up during the show and laugh at the appropriate moments. But it's an idea.
But you can't hear on that side, though. So if they're streaming, if they're doing that stuff, like, it's to silence. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
tricky.
A bit of canned laughter on a hey, great joke there. No, they are laughing. I can see there's like a laughter emojis that everybody's pressing. And then the other thing is, I'm getting in my ears. Everybody wants to know about your shoe collection over our shoulders, black and red Jordans. What's going on?
There's a lot of impulse purchases here that I now regret. I collect sneakers and.
The black and red ones over your right shoulder.
Yeah, no, they're classics. They're the greats, right? They're the grails right there. I mean, that's where it all began. I mean, these I love these, though, because, you know, there was a superpower associated with the Reebok pump, the idea that, the Jordan shoes will make you fly, but the pump ones, you actually have to, you know, engage in filling. You know, I'm completely obsessed with that kind of, I guess it's nostalgia, and I think we're all feeling a little bit of that at the moment, and there's a comfort in having these things that you couldn't have when you were a kid. They were off in a far off land, right? And and they're kind of, there's something about them as well that I just love the art of them. That's a style that is now being repeated and we're trying to recapture.
The black and reds, are they Air Jordans, the original Air Jordans?
Yeah, Air Jordan ones. They're, you know, the original version of that. That's been re-released multiple times. But the originals, if you have a box of them somewhere in your house, if you're watching this now going, geez, so I think we have a pair of them in the box in the attic. I remember my cousin brought them back from the J1 in 1984. They're worth 25 grand. Those ones there are worth about 200 quid, and they may see eBay if things keep going the way they're going. But it's an industry, but I'd imagine it's tanking now as well, hard. So if you are looking in the market, get on StockX or eBay, get yourself the ones you always wanted.
You obviously collect these. Do you wear them to gigs? Are they like, this gig's big enough, I'm doing Vicar Street tonight?
Yeah, they're a tax write-off. No, I do. I would. I used them to. I used to have a long period of just taking them out of the box and smelling them and going, oh. And then you just, there's a movement actually in the kind of sneakerhead community that's to wear your sneakers. I mean, if anything, what we're going through now tells you, what are you doing storing these things? I mean, some of them look truly absurd. Like, some of them, like, they are to be looked at. But yeah, I'd wear them most of the time.
Charlotte, great stuff. We wish you all the very best. You've obviously made the decision to stay.
We have.
We wish your family continuing health and enjoy bunkering down as much as you can.
I will. And Jerry, you guys are doing an amazing job. Love the show. And we'll hopefully see you in July.
Thanks a million. That's Charlotte Regan there, the host of the Irishman Abroad podcast, which you can get from all podcast apps. You can get it on the Go Loud app and wherever you get your podcasts. We wholeheartedly recommend and support Charlotte. And look, it just brings it back to the piece we were talking about earlier on, Callum Brown, who is 19 and has no passport and is trying to get home from Australia. Like, there are people, Irish people all around the world, who are experiencing a real longing for home at the moment. And you totally understand it.
Absolutely. It's kind of a terrifying thing for some people. in certain quarters of the world. But I guess podcasts like Jarlath are able to kind of connect and do things for people abroad and who might be in places like the United Kingdom or in Australia who have a terrible situation going on. But you just wish Jarlath and his other half all the best in these next few weeks. Like, you can already see pictures this morning, I think, from packed tubes in London. It's going to be there are going to be teething problems with their current lockdown. It is not going to be something that might be in full flow and fully effective for a time at the moment as well. So not exactly the most hopeful scenes from over there, but you just have to wish them all the best.
All right, we're going to get into episode 2 of Off the Couch next with Andy Dunn. It's our new lunchtime fitness series here on OTB, live from 1 o'clock every day with a variety of experts in the fields of health and fitness. First, though, let's hear from Simon Zeebo, speaking exclusively with Joe last night on Off the Ball. Will we see him back in the red of Munster?
It's very exciting now at the moment, the racing, and I'm really happy to be here. But obviously, as I said, I do miss home, and I'll never not have a love for Munster, you know. So there'll only be one club I go back to.
When's your contract up?
I signed a 2+1, so I've the third year as well, okay. Potentially. Okay. So we'll have to see.
And do you decide that, or did they decide that?
I think, yeah, me.
Okay, so you have the option for a third year if you want it.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
So, we'll see. Stop looking at me like that, Jim.
Because there must be the lure of finishing, you know, one last year at Thomond and maybe even 2023 World Cup. You know, if you're talking about playing until that age, that must be vaguely in the conversation or in the horizon.
Yeah, it would... going back to playing Thomond Park would be special, all right. I'd never say it wouldn't be. It would be incredible to go back. I would really love to do it, but you know, sometimes you don't get played the cards you always want to. So we'll have to see. But you know, I genuinely love life in Paris. Mm. You know, I could not be happier day to day, and my family as well. So There will be a lot going into the next decision on where to play my rugby. So we'll have to see. But obviously the World Cup is there, but I'd probably be way too old. so that wouldn't hold much weight. So just be, either home or Paris.
We'll be on the radio here saying Zeebo's legs have gone. I can't believe he's in the World Cup squad. That'll be the conversation. Have you spoken with Andy Farrell? I know you kind of know him through, obviously, Lions tours as well as the Irish setup.
No, I haven't spoken to him. No. So, I'd imagine he'd probably, in the positions he's in, he's just into the job, and he's not going to start going making phone calls all over the place. So I completely understand. But me and Andy have a very good relationship, so that will remain the same regardless of whether he picks me up to come play rugby for Ireland or not.
Great stuff from Simon Zeebo last night on the show, speaking with Joe Molloy. You can get that on the Off the Ball podcast network. It's there in our rugby and our highlight section as well. Andy Dunn, good morning to you. How's the head?
It's not too bad, thanks, Jerry. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. We've been talking a fair bit this morning about the existential dread that has been gripping people. It comes and goes, but one thing that definitely helps is a little bit of exercise.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. We've had to close our doors in that mind, but it's been quite inspirational actually, because the average age of people who come to our clinic is 63. So there's a lot of older people with medical conditions, and the thoughts for them of using telehealth or online appointments seemed like torture, but with a little bit of patience and kindness and perseverance, and help from grandchildren or children, they're getting up online. They're doing their exercises in their pajamas and their underwear at home. And hilarious videos that we couldn't share really. But people are particularly people with health conditions, maybe heart conditions, diabetics, cancer patients, who've got a limited access to services now. It's actually hugely important that they exercise to boost their immunity. So our team are still providing that for our patients, and it's been a very difficult time. That little shift has been kind of nice and inspirational and a bit of fun chatting to people in their homes again. And
yeah, it's a physio service for people who are at various stages of life and either rehab or prehab or they've got a little bit of a niggle, or they've actually had something fairly serious happen to them and you're trying to get them back to as much fitness as possible?
Yeah, we specialize in exercise. So we're a team of physios, an occupational therapist and a dietitian, but we specialize in exercise for people with medical conditions. So we might have, I'm doing exercise at home currently with a lady who had a mitral valve replacement 8 weeks ago, open heart surgery. So she absolutely requires exercise, and she requires the health benefits of exercise as a key component part of her recovery. I'm working with a man who's got bladder cancer. I'm working with people who've had spinal fusion. So they would have been discharged out of hospital in the last few months. They do need access to what we're called allied health services, but they can't get them at the moment. So that's why we're doing our online exercise with them. But it's been, you know, the challenges we thought around use of technology haven't actually come to pass as much. And they've quite enjoyed, you know, learning how to use Zoom or learning how to use online telehealth. So, yeah, it's been nice. I mean, it's a stressful time for everyone, stressful time for ourselves in the clinic, but it's much more stressful for people who've lost access to services. So we're just trying to do our best to help them.
What are you doing? What's your own personal fitness routine like at the moment?
Well, I started to get fitter back around last September. I think I saw a screenshot of myself on Off the Ball, and I'd put on a bit of stone in the last 2 years. So I'd say that was due to stress. Not eating well because of working long hours, and just, you know, so I said I'd get my arse in gear. You can't really purport to be, you know, some kind of clinical specialist on exercise and not exercise and be overweight. So I started to do about 3 or 4 sessions a week since September, and I've actually kept that going. So I now do 3 or 4 sessions a week, about 30 minutes each. And I've done over, I'm taking a little chart on my fridge. I've done 109 sessions since September.
Right.
And the key things for people who aren't, you know, experts or who aren't interested in exercise or who feel not for them or lose motivation, they're the big issues. I think the key things are to try and enjoy it, find something that you enjoy. And secondly, is to make sure you are sweaty and a little bit out of breath, because that's something that people overlook in exercise. Sometimes they do exercise, take long rest in between the exercises they're doing. So if you know, the World Health Organization, we're paying a lot of attention to recommendations from them. They talk about moderate exercise, which is, you know, getting up off your arse, going and making a bowl of cornflakes. That's physical activity, moderate exercise. That's any general movement. But they require 150 minutes of that in a week. So maybe that's cumulative. That could be in 15-10 minute periods. But they also require 30 to 75 minutes of vigorous exercise or a combination. So vigorous would be defined as sweaty, breathless. That's about as much as you need to know. The rest is up to you. So you can be very imaginative and you can improvise. Exercise is not defined to strict parameters. Once you get sweaty and out of breath, it works.
So what is the solution to people who want to get sweaty and out of breath in your lunchtime workout today, Andy, without giving too much away?
We're still getting carry on here. people who are cooped up and bored at home had to get sweaty and breathless. you know, isn't it obvious? No, I think there's a lot of things you can do. A very, very simple one, if we're going to keep it clean, or getting up and down off the floor, from upright to fully flat, and back upright again. We do that a lot with people, particularly of an older age group. But for younger people, if you do that straight for 60 seconds, you'd be amazed how difficult it is. You're using 80 as an 80 muscles to get up and down off the floor. You're working against resistance and gravity, and provided you don't have any kind of underlying blood pressure issues, it's a really good exercise. So we try and hit numbers on that. If you're over 65, my mom, for example, is in her, we'll say mid-70s. She can do it 7 times in a minute now. And if you go and try and do that yourself, and you can't do 7 times in a minute, you're not as fit as my mom in her mid-70s.
Is that the silent burpee you're talking about?
No, that's a slightly different one. But the silent burpee one would be for more, I suppose, the age group who might listen into Off the Ball between 25 and 40. That's a bit more vigorous. That involves a bit more explosive work. And for people who are bored at home or working out of an office, that's a really nice exercise to try and use your stomach, your shoulders, your upper body. Yeah.
You had a walkout one as well, where it's kind of a walkout push-up.
Yes. That's kind of, there's lots of names for it. People call it an inchworm. You inch your way out like a worm. So you go from standing to walking yourself out with your hands into a press-up position, do a mini press-up, and then walk your hands back in to fully standing. Again, I'd encourage people to try them. I tried to pick three exercises that are they're actually quite difficult to do, even though they don't look that difficult. If you try and do each one for around a minute, you'll find your heart rate is pumping. You're quite breathless, and you can feel it in your muscles. And even in 3-4 minutes, if you do that, you're doing more than sitting around doing nothing. It's quite effective.
So a lot of us might be, like you were back in September, just starting our journey on fitness, I think might be a polite way of putting it, Andy. Can we do this now?
Yeah.
We can.
So. Yeah, I would say certainly you can do the bouncing ball one and the rotations. You could certainly do the walkouts with your hands. I'd encourage maybe you could get up on the desk there, Jared, could you, and just give us a demo.
On the desk for which? What do you want me to do? Yeah. What do you want me to do?
Go on.
What am I doing?
We're just clear the newspapers.
Come on, what am I, tell me exactly what I have to do here.
Well, first of all, we've got to clear the newspapers. I want you to, you stand on the desk.
Yeah.
And you got to walk your hands out in front of you across those newspapers.
No, I'm going to break the desk.
So yeah, if anyone looks in at the video, you've got to, you know, what I would encourage people to do though is start small, keep it regular, and try and get some enjoyment out of it. Because one of the key areas around consistency with exercise is boredom or hatred, or just people just do not like doing it. And it takes a lot of time if you've got work. People are completely overburdened at home between work and the kids now. Try and do 3 to 5 minutes, see if you get your heart rate up. And simply, you'll know that because you're breathless. But just do little things that you enjoy. And if you do it consistently, you'll find you get a little bit of a kick. You get a bit more of a virtuous cycle. You start to feel the benefits of it, and then you get plugs you in to do a little bit more.
Yeah, and that's the endorphins. So we were talking with Alan Quinlan yesterday about it, and he was saying, you know, he's had issues with anxiety in the past. He'd be fairly anxious. And this is like the most anxious time that any of us are ever going to live through, fingers crossed. And look, the endorphins that you get from exercise is a fairly obvious thing that is available to everybody if you just have a little bit of structure to your day.
It's often people will comment to us in the clinic that, you know, psychologically, it makes me feel better. But actually, and that's true, but actually what is that? It's not psychology that's happening there, it's physiology. When the body exercises, it releases two hormones in particular, but serotonin is one of the main ones, and that's known informally as the happy hormone. So exercise releases the happy hormone. So it's not a psychological response, it's more a physiological response. It's your body thanking you and rewarding you for movement. Similarly, exercise reduces cortisol, which is a stress hormone. I think Luke O'Neill has been on the show before, but he's a professor of immunology in Trinity, and he speaks a lot about the benefits of exercise reducing stress. So, if you talk about, even if you hate exercise or you don't know exactly what you ought to do, if you think about those two benefits that will make you happier and reduce your stress, they're pretty key for survival right now.
No, totally.
Also have your immunity.
Andy, I don't know if you've thought about rugby. Are you using rugby as a release? Are you watching box sets? What are you doing?
I found rugby so boring in the last couple of months. I've got a rugby hangover. You watched Maradona the other night. So one of my best friends has decided to set up a little WhatsApp group, currently just me and him on it, and he's called it A Nation Holds Its Breath, and we're sending each other favourite sporting moments we've seen over the years on YouTube, and the qualification is we have to have been alive while it happened.
Right.
And the earliest one he just sent through was the 1982 clearing break by Alex Higgins in the World Snooker Championship. And Higgins, I think, shoots 62 to win the title. And he just sent me that through. And it's pretty amazing. We've traded videos in cricket. I remember an old Ian Evans score for Wales, a try he got in Cardiff against Scotland in 1988. So we're being rugby nerds, but we're being sports nerds as well. And we're trading YouTube videos together. So that's a bit of fun.
Yeah, I think whatever it takes to get through this, because I was going to ask you some stuff about the Six Nations, but actually, do you know what? I can't at the moment. I'm not ready to think about the Six Nations and where we are. And
I'm delighted that the Pro 14 has been cancelled.
They should have given Leinster the title, though, right?
Like, yeah, I think that probably would have been fair. But that opens a tin of worms. I'm a Liverpool fan too, so
absolutely not. No title for Leinster unless they win the flag out, lads.
Yeah, all right, on. Moonlight Serenade has been in touch to say, I have this on every morning while I log onto my laptop at home. It's great therapy for the soul. So there you go. I'm glad that we're providing some kind of hope for people. Andy, look, it's been great having you on this morning. Thanks very much for doing the Off the Couch for us today. And we might get you on to talk about some of the great sports that you're watching, because everybody also needs that in their lives. A little bit of good quality nostalgia where the hangover isn't related to what's going on at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Cher.
If anybody wants an online consultation with you, how do they get it?
They go to our website, personalhealth.ie. All our team are available and willing and ready to do online consultations, telehealth, exercise prescription in your home, particularly for people who've got health conditions or medical conditions who are concerned about being isolated. They're the market that really need our services. So if they need to call, they can ring. It's diverted to all our mobiles as well. They can phone us at 01-496-4002, or they can get us on the website, personalhealth.ie.
Andy, great stuff.
On my T-shirt there.
Oh, yeah, nice one. You should send us some in.
I will do.
Right, come on. Thanks a million.
Nice to see you, Jer.
Cheers. That's Andy Dunn giving us his thoughts there. And his video is going to be up live at lunchtime today. Off the Couch is our new fitness series to help us all stay fit or get fit during this period of social isolation. Some of Ireland's leading trainers, physios, fitness experts, sports people and other friends of the show are going to be sharing their top tips in straight to the point and easy to use videos, which will go live across all of our social channels every day at lunchtime. We are going to take a quick break and then we're back with player ratings for Better Call Saul after this.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. Off the Ball.
But when I got to Liverpool, I thought, right, I've bought myself a nice Aston Martin. I pulled up at the lights alongside Roy Keane, of all people, and I had the shades on. I think I was listening to some Speed Garage. My arm was out the window. You know, I was having myself. And then Roy gave me that look that he's given many of people in his time. And as he sped off into the distance, I was sitting in this car, looked at myself in the mirror and thought, I need to get rid of this.
Off the Ball. Weeknights from 7 and weekends from 1. This is OTB Sports Radio. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Yeah, you're very welcome back. It is time to launch our brand new show, Jer. It is the Player Rating Show. It is the show where we rate players, but not in sport. We're actually going to turn our attention to some other stuff that we've been watching over the last couple of weeks. We decided that you and I are watching Better Call Saul at the moment, so we've decided to delve into season one. For people who aren't following Better Call Saul, for people who intend to follow Better Call Saul, there may actually be a couple of spoilers over the next 15 minutes or so. There's some other fantastic off-the-ball content that may pique your interest if you do want to keep your ears closed. But we are only going to focus
season one.
On season one.
Yeah,
so season one only today, Jer. So mind yourself, how far through this entire thing are you? Is there a possibility that I could get my entire thing spoiled? Because I'm only...
Half.
Oh, you're 3.5.
Nearly, Wow. Yeah. Maybe a bit more. So the trouble when you don't watch something the way it's being released at the moment is that you don't actually remember which season is which. So we've watched this now over the last 10 days. And I had to go back and read the recaps on season one to make sure that I wasn't going to be talking about season two here. I just want to out you here, though, Owen, before we get going. We've been trying to do this for a very long time. We were using the 20th anniversary of the start of The Sopranos as an opportunity to go back and revisit and rewatch. I dutifully rewatched every single episode. You watched about two episodes and were like, nah, can't be arsed. This is too complicated and difficult for me.
My brain just isn't big enough, to be honest. I don't know what happened to that. I was really enjoying it. I think I got to about episode or maybe 12 or something like that. And it was really, really good. And then, I don't know, life got in the way. Maybe a big weekend happened or something. And then I went back to work on Monday and had a long week. And I was like, you know what? I'm done with television for the time being. But now is not that time. I'm in. I have opened the door to Better Call Saul and I've shut it behind me. And I'm not leaving this house until I get the whole thing done. So I will admit your binge watching capabilities are much better than mine. But I appreciate the issue that you've presented yourself with. I'm sure there are people at home who are well up to speed on Better Call Saul. Just for them, I'm going to give a quick plot recap of where we finished up in season one. I think that's the most important thing. So season one of Better Call Saul introduces us to a whole host of hilarious characters, I think, in the opening episodes. We've got Craig and Betsy Kettleman and their embezzlement case. We've got the skateboarding twins, Lars and Carl, who we've got Jimmy trying to use to get money out of the Kettlemans or to get business out of the Kettlemans. We've got Tuco making his season one appearance at the end of the first episode and throughout the second episode. And then his associate Nacho as well. We're introduced to him early doors in season one. Midway through season one, the crucial plot point really is when Jimmy takes a bribe off the Kettlemans and uses this money to splash out on that billboard, which is obviously a complete copy of HHM. And as a result of that, there is a cease and desist letter that is brought against Jimmy, and he has to pull off that billboard stunt, which gets some front page news and a hell of a load of business, which mainly constitutes old people. There is that elderly woman who I think is a cracking character, who utilizes Jimmy to write her will, and that just sparks this whole Sandpiper saga off. People will be familiar with the Sandpiper saga who watch the show. I'm not going to explain it, but basically Jimmy gets knee deep in Sandpiper and has to start working on this case with his brother Chuck midway through season one. Now, granted, I'm only midway through season two, but I already know it's a pretty pivotal plot point that it's revealed that Chuck's condition is psychosomatic, and he goes outside accidentally once or twice and is relatively fine. He's obviously a bit of a recluse. He's keeping himself indoors. Later on in the season, then, Chuck obviously screws Jimmy over. And when the case is handed over to HHM, Chuck is going to go back to be a partner on the case. Jimmy is frozen out. That is probably the key plot point near the end of season one. And that is kind of where we leave things up. We've got Jimmy also weighing up an offer from Santa Fe to work with that firm before season two kicks off. The only other thing I'll mention in terms of plot points is, of course, Mike, because there's a plot here that doesn't run in with Jimmy McGill whatsoever. And this is the killing of two Philadelphia policemen. He's paid a visit by two Philadelphia policemen as well and manages to get off the hook when Jimmy is his lawyer. So I know that's taken about a minute and a half there, but that is as quickly as I can sum up season one. So we're at the end. Jimmy's about to go to Santa Fe to go back working on the Sandpiper case. But before we get into this, Jer, I think when you turn on season one of Better Call Saul, the first thing you're obviously going to do is compare it to Breaking Bad. First of all, you think to yourself, this is funnier. This is better written in a lot of ways than season one of Breaking Bad. If we are comparing season one with season one, you're straight away looking at this thing thinking, this is a raging success.
Breaking Bad operates at a much higher level, I would argue. And you're comparing something that comes after that has had its way prepared by the entire world. So Breaking Bad establishes an entire universe that we can see as consistent, and then this other thing is an add-on to that. So I think that's incorrect. You can't have Better Call Saul without having first established exactly Mike Ehrmantraut. We know what Mike Ehrmantraut is. We know where this is going with Saul and Mike. And when you say it's better written, they don't have to build stuff. There's a shorthand that they can use. So I think that's completely unfair. I think that, like, you've got to remember again, Breaking Bad emerged as an absolute phenomenon at a time when The Sopranos was finished and had Mad Men just started, was the first season one of Mad Men, and then they rolled out Breaking Bad immediately afterwards on AMC as well. These are the best TV shows of all time that we're talking about, and Better Call Saul is not in that conversation.
Oof. Yeah, okay, I will accept that. What I will stress here, Ger, is that I'm comparing early season Breaking Bad with early season Better Call Saul, and I think there is a huge difference. I will admit that the build of Breaking Bad is hugely satisfying.
Is Bryan Cranston not in his pants in a Humvee in the desert crashing and leaving a message? Is that not the opening scene of season one? It's been a long time since I watched Breaking Bad, and I might go back and watch it again on the basis of this, but like...
So it starts on a pretty good height, and then it kind of comes off that, and I think the story certainly is let to simmer for a season and a half after the start of season one. I'll give you that.
Let me ask you, what did you expect this to be?
I didn't expect this to be as funny as it was. I don't know what I expected, Ger. To be honest with you, this has been very much a quarantine watch for me. I really did not like Saul Goodman in Breaking Bad. When I heard that they were making a Saul Goodman spin-off, I was like, meh, who cares? I would much rather watch something where Mike is a central character, and granted, he's obviously a central character in this. I could have picked a host of different characters from Breaking Bad that I might have actually had more interest in. I actually just was not that interested in Saul Goodman. I thought he was a bit of a player, a bit of a con man, and other than that, I didn't think he had a hell of a lot of depth. I was very, very surprised that what you then have is something where you have a situation where there's flash forwards and flashbacks, and there's a little bit of mystery around the edges, where there's a bit of grit in certain areas with regards to some of the things Mike is doing. And I guess the most obvious thing to say here, which I probably didn't expect, was the comedic element of the whole thing. But I kind of didn't find Saul Goodman that funny. Like, did you find Saul to be an entertaining character in the way that he is in Better Call Saul?
No, and I actually don't remember that much about. Like, so I'm gonna have to go back and rewatch the episodes that he was in. There is an episode called Better Call Saul in season 3, I think, and that's the introduction to. I can't remember what happens to him at the end of Breaking Bad either. Like, I haven't gone back and read those recaps.
He gets sent off to Nebraska, though, doesn't he? That's the whole point of the start of season one, episode one.
The Cinnabon. That's, so he's working in a Cinnabon. He's a manager of a coffee shop.
Yeah, so that's obviously a continuation on from that. Go on.
I didn't know that, but like, here to back you up, right? We watched the first series of this when it came out, and never went back to watch the second season, and we're like, okay, this is definitely a quarantine watch for us as well, but are pretty happy about it. You know, like, it's there's a mindless, funny release to the pandemic, sitting on your couch watching this.
I think you're being harsh. I think you're being extremely harsh. That is what this is. I would admit that the reason is a quarantine watch, but I'm unbelievably happy that that is the reason. Sometimes you need a trivial reason to take something seriously. I'm taking this 100% seriously as a top quality television show. Yes, it is a rung below Breaking Bad in the overall sense, but in terms of an opening season and how it sustains itself, I think it's outstanding. Of course, you're not going to be putting this in the same bracket as The Wire or The Sopranos. Or Breaking Bad.
I'll tell you, I didn't expect it to be a... So it's a family drama. It's the row between two brothers is the key plot engine in this whole thing.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be a legal procedural. So it's a cross between, like, some family drama and Matlock. Do you know what Matlock is?
I did. Matlock is actually who Jimmy McGill models himself on midway through season one. He wears the Matlock suit.
Yeah, but it was like a very popular TV series when we were kids that would have been on one of the two channels that the whole country had, and so everybody watched it and everybody would know the theme tune, for example. But you've never seen an episode of it your life?
No. I've never seen Matlock. I know Matlock via Better Call Saul.
He's an old lawyer, a southern gentleman, who always wins cases through, you know, the power of his brain. And there's gentle comedy in it.
I think there's a lot more than gentle comedy in this. I know that's not what you're saying. You're saying Matlock is gentle comedy. But we might get into somebody's player rating. So we're going to give each of the main protagonists...
There's a bag of Matlock off this. There is. It's absolutely one of the founding texts for the show. Like, he's not just putting the suit on because it's like... the lads loved... The writers were, I'm sure, I haven't read this, but they were like... Definitely. Oh, how can we make Jimmy win this thing that has everybody surprised at the end of this week's episode?
Well, no, the whole Matlock thing is a comedic vehicle. That's all that is. Like, it's playing to the old people in the...
I tell you, for a generation, it's like, oh, Jimmy's going to win. This is going to end well for Jimmy. I'm telling you, because he's wearing the clothes and he sounds like him and he's dressing like him. And there's like...
That's a bit. Like, obviously, that's a bit. That's not... Like that.
I'm telling you, it's a founding text of the show. Guarantee. And okay, they might deny it, but... Let's wait and see.
But it's up there with him... stealing HHM's like ideas and their exact same billboard. Him putting on that suit is up there with that. Like, is it a nod to that? It's just for pure comedy value.
It's more than that. It's way more than that.
Well, we'll see. Well, I disagree with you to a certain point. I think you're underestimating what this show is. We will get into the player ratings because this is what we're going to do here. We're going to rate the players from every season, just on season one. Performances now today. We're going to give a character a rating out of 10 and a little line into them. So I'm just going to lead things off. We go character by character. I've given Jimmy McGill, played by Bob Odenkirk, a 9. An extremely accomplished showing throughout, a few errors here and there, which serve only to heighten his cult hero status. That is my line on the player rating of Jimmy McGill.
I'm giving him a 9 as well.
Why?
He's a good character. 9 in player ratings, there is no science, they're all bollocks, they're made up on the spot, and they're done at the very last second. So I'm giving him a 9. There's no why. I'm giving him a 9. It's a 9. 9 out of 10, Owen. It's a 9.
Come back to Jimmy in a moment. There's a few things I want to say, but especially in terms of his relationships with other characters. Chuck McGill, played by Michael McKean, who of course is of this is Spinal Tap fame. I was trying to think to myself, where on earth have I seen this guy, or what, like, you know, he pops up in things here and there, but I was like, what is the real text that I recognize Michael McKean from? And of course, it had been a while since I watched this is Spinal Tap. I've given Chuck McGill a 7, living off past glories, living off scraps from his teammates, a late equalizer for the opposition, which comes against the run of play.
So I made the mistake of putting my player ratings up on the shared document that we were doing this on, and you've just copied my player ratings. I've also got a 7 for Chuck.
I did not read these, to be quite honest with you. These are done entirely independent of yours. But like, Chuck is the definition of a 7. And it's like an upward arc near the end. I think the betrayal is a good thing for a character. We'll move on to Mike. I've given him a 9. The enforcer, not afraid to get stuck into his opponent. Like an electric blanket. Comforting and cozy, but a fire hazard if you turn it up the wrong way.
Yeah, so I forgot Mike killed the 2 cops in this season.
It was a revenge killing.
I had him down as a 6. It's clearly an 8.
You got to stick with your original rating, as you say. Player ratings.
No, I've changed my mind. I've now put in as much thought as you should do to player ratings, and I've changed it to an 8. My point about this is Mike hasn't fully evolved yet. Like, Mike is actually probably going to be the most important character in this whole thing. And his...
are you speaking from like a season 3.5 sort of standpoint here? Because we can't be having that in our season 1 review.
No. I'm just saying that, like, it's when you think about what we know, because of the architecture of the whole season has already been established, because there's been, 60 episodes of another series where these people have already interacted. Mike is clearly one of the best characters in Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. And in the first season, he has, like, to gain revenge for the murder of his son. He has shot dead 2 cops. Like, okay, this is a good character. He should never have been a 6. He's an 8 because he hasn't fully evolved yet, and there's more evolution to come. Like, where's my arc, as Christopher asks? Yeah.
I'm going one further. I think he's up there with Jimmy as an absolutely unbelievable character at a 9. Let's get the next 3 characters, because we brought this out to 3 main protagonists. I'll be interested in your ratings here. Kim Wexler, I've given her a 5. A passenger, questionable commitment, clearly an excellent influence on her teammates, but doesn't seem fully invested in the direction the team is going.
I think Kim's badly written. I think she's completely underdeveloped. Like, what is the point of her at this point? You're not even exactly sure if they're in a relationship or not. I've given her a 3. And it's
exactly.
I'm not giving her a 3. I'm giving the writers a 3. Like, she's an excellent actor. But what's her role in all this? And this is one of those things where you hope that there's going to be a payoff later on and she can have some stories and some scenes and some action a little bit later on.
100%. It's very much fence-sitting from the writers on Kim's direction in this in season 1. I thought, like, a very, very forgettable character, I would have thought. Howard Hamlin, I've given Howard a 3. Posed a big threat early doors, but his menace eased considerably as proceedings raged on. A very weak finish.
I'm giving Howard a 7 because I actually think that he's a perfect, crappy, smarmy villain. Every time he comes on, it's essentially he's wearing a black hat.
Exactly, crappy villain.
You know exactly what's going to happen. Comic relief, and I'm happy with my mark of 7
out of 10. Comic relief? He's never said anything funny in the entire season.
Look at him. Look at how he never actually moves. Look, it's like he's got one of those post-car accident traction things that he's got. I mean, he's never worn different clothes in any circumstance at all. It's like, wow, they've painted this guy's character on. So I'm giving him a 7 for consistency.
I will give it to you. The stealing of his look is up there as one of the comedic highlights of the entire season. That doesn't happen unless Howard is who he is.
He's Dennis Irwin, Mr. Dependable.
No, like, I think the fact that at the end that it's not him that screws Jimmy over, it's actually Chuck, also lessens the appeal that Howard gives to me as well. He's not even a villain. Chuck is the villain. Like, what does this guy even pose? He's himself and Kim, very, very weak for me. And like, this is making me very unlikely to ever watch Law and Order or some sort of law show, because the lawyers, the kind of bona fide lawyers in this are boring.
Yes.
The last main protagonist you want to mention here is Nacho. I've given Nacho a 5, middle of the road. My description has rubbed with some of the greatest players Albuquerque has ever seen. When will this potential show, though? Season 1 was a mere glimpse of his talents, you feel.
So you feel like he's up from the youth team, has got a bit of a run. Mm. Troy Parrott figure, almost.
Exactly, with Harry Kane being Tuco Salamanca. And we haven't seen very much of Harry Kane this season. We didn't see much of Tuco in Season 1, but he is still by far the best gangster in Season 1, whereas Nacho, far more screen time, far less of an impact.
Yeah, I've given Nacho an 8. I think there's...
How can you possibly give him an 8 on first season performances?
There's a depth there. There's something that would suggest that Nacho has a role to play in all this. Like, they didn't just... He's not just a hothead. He's somebody that is listening to what everybody says. Like, he saves Jimmy's life.
Hmm.
In the scene in the desert when Tuco wants to kill him.
I have that scene down as just pure comedy. In terms of reading much into it as far as characters go, I'm not quite sure. I think it's interesting that he goes that way. But for me, I think that there's a lot of vagary about him. I have started into season 2 and I know that it's going to get into... He is going to become a far more important character, but I just don't see much of him.
The two skateboarding brothers are they twins? They end up with broken legs. And you're like, ah, oh, ha, 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 comedy. I mean, it was a tough upbringing in the streets of Far East.
Oh, well, that season is absolutely phenomenal. The start, so like, we can go into a couple of other takeaways. And one of the things I think we both agree on this is that the incidental characters in season 1 are just phenomenal. So Lars and Carl, the twins, the skateboarding twins. Like, if you brought them back for a reprise at some point in this, I will not be disappointed whatsoever. You've got Daniel Wormald and the two mercenaries with Mike when they're going out to do their first deal with the pills. Those guys, also my favorite characters, possibly. And also, Mrs. Ngoyen. He's the guy who's selling the pills.
All right.
And Mrs. Ngoyen, the lady who runs the salon and won't let Jimmy drink the cucumber water, absolutely top class character. All of these little moments we get is the thing that props up season 1. A lot, as we've gone through, half of these protagonists are actually shite in season 1. But these these guys that come through and flitter around from episode to episode, they are the strength of this whole thing.
Tuco Salamanca, 10 out of 10, steals every scene he's in, really good. You know that there's a menace coming there. You know that he's actually good for the threats that he's making. He's a 10 out of 10. And these incidental characters, I'm kind of very happy to see them.
Overall, you think this is a slow-moving season?
Yeah, it is. It is. The Sandpiper legal case, I'm not into it. It's... It seems like it's a bit of a millstone around the writer's neck where they're like constantly going back to this thing. And like, ultimately, it definitely sends us on a few weird tangents that I would much rather be in with the cartel. Like, so my expectation was that this was going to be the cartel and Jimmy being a lawyer. Saul Goodman, essentially. But Saul Goodman doesn't appear in season 1. I'm not sure if Saul Goodman's going to appear in season 2. I think it might be in the middle of season 3 before we get to Saul Goodman.
Mm.
I'm like, okay, I understand that this is the origin story, and I get that now. I get that they're slowly teasing out that if you're going to end up as a completely amoral, ambulance chasing blot on the arse of humanity, that you're not born that way. You're made that way. You're pushed towards being somebody who will happily represent the worst drug dealers in the world.
Yeah.
And how do, who is that character? How do they get created? And I guess that's what this is.
Exactly.
I didn't expect that.
Well, like that's the entire point. That season one is a situation where Jimmy is in limbo, where he takes the bribe from the Kettlemans. He gives the money back to the county, though, when it comes to the big wad of cash. And then at the end of the season, he's telling Mike, remind me to never do something stupid that again. Remind me to never do the right thing ever again. So we have a character here who is in limbo. We have this sort of metaphor, which is his con man mate having a heart attack at the end of season one. Is this the end of Jimmy McGill, the con man? Of course it's not, because we've all seen Breaking Bad. But I'm interested in how this push happens. I think Sandpiper could be a key point in this. Like, we've watched The Wire, and we've seen moments where you're thinking to yourself, why does this story exist and why are they persisting with this? And then it has an unbelievable payoff. I'm certainly clinging to hope on the Sandpiper thing on that, as somebody who's watched season one. I think that this could become a vital cog in the entire thing. I think the lawyers are going to become more interesting characters and more rounded characters as the whole thing rages on. And I just think that just sums up the depth that is actually in this show, that you are kind of scratching your head a little bit as to why certain storylines are in there. I'm giving the writers the benefit of the doubt after one season. Granted, I'm helped by the fact that everybody raves about this thing who's made it to season five.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're raving about it if these things are all pointless.
As you said, legal procedurals, Law and Order, if that's your thing, go and watch 27 episodes.
Yeah. Jimmy McGill, though, or Mike, MVP for season one, Better Call Saul. We'll do another one in a couple of days. I'm going to turn up the ante on it a little bit here and try and catch up to you.
Right. That's it. We're done. That's your player ratings are done. They're in the books.
Absolutely. It's been emotional.
We've had a WhatsApp through from a friend of the show, Johnny Kennedy, from the Long Haul Bar in New York City, and he's got the Jordan 1, the 1985 one, lowest ask, $20,000. $20,000. That's pretty good. Sell them ASAP, he's saying. That's a message for Jarlath Regan, who was with us a little bit earlier on, talking us through his shoe collection and his existential angst. Johnny, I hope you're doing all right over there, and we might actually check in with you in the next couple of days to see how things are going there. It is 21 minutes past 9 this morning. If you missed anything, you can catch the podcast back, or you can watch us back on our YouTube channel. They're both timestamped, so you can scroll through to wherever you want to go. Up next, it's the Krabby Quiz.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
They spoke about your arm not being down beside your side. I mean, this is not Irish dancing.
OTB Sports Radio.
Basketball would have been my main game.
The brand new sports radio station from Off the Ball.
That's my point. Don't play for us if you're a proud Englishman.
Now broadcasting 24 hours a day, live on the Go Loud app, Alexa.
You have a whole new world of possibilities.
Google Home, tune in, and offtheball.com/radio.
This is OTB Sports Radio.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Chris Bond.
Oh, you're kidding me!
September.
Kyle Lafferty.
Are you joking me?
Is that right?
I know! Is that right?
Anybody else?
Leash, was it?
Like, that is one of the most stupid questions.
Darius Vassell?
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome along to the shoutiest segment on Irish radio and a multitude of online platforms. It is the scintillating, it is the stupefying, it is the splendido Krabby Quiz. Every Tuesday and Friday, we pit three of Team Off the Ball up against one another in a quiz of sporting factoids at the start of the week and at the end of the week. Allow me to welcome today's contestants. Our first contestant today is Instagram's version of the Bull McCabe. He spent the weekend lurking around empty fields trying to get his hands on some of the hottest land in the west of Ireland. Give it up for Tommy Rooney.
Good morning. Good afternoon, lads. How are we all?
How's life west of the Shannon?
It's good. Isolation is it's lonely, but it's good.
What? Okay. Tell us about the fields you've been looking at.
We went in search of a walk that could be done away from other people, and I don't drive, so Chief was driving, and we found a Gaelic football pitch that hasn't been in use for a very long time. So I kind of thought it was symptomatic for the times that we're in. Perhaps all of our GA pitches will look like that very soon.
You're going to make an offer that they can't refuse? What sort of what's the GA club that will be selling it or that own it, or what's the story?
Oh, it was the old grounds of St. Bracken's GA club. We should actually do a piece on it, because I got three or four of the lads who used to play up in North Clare got in touch with me on Twitter and shared some fantastic stories about there being a swamp in the middle of the pitch. There's an incline, a severe incline on the left-hand side. There's always rushes in a particular corner of the field, and how they had cold showers before they were trendy to have cold showers down there. So I say there's great stories in a lot of those pitches across the country.
Sounds great. Sounds nice and lonely. In the middle seat is a man who has instructed his kids time and time again to run into the room while we are recording one of these pieces so he can go viral and get world famous like the guy on BBC News. They have yet to pander to their father's ginormous ego, though. Give it up to Nathan, Nate Dog Murphy.
It's a fact. Hey. They just peek their heads in the door every so often. They've yet to be brave enough to actually come into the homemade studio.
We need a door behind you, first of all, for it to have full effect.
Oh, so I should move over to where the door is?
Yes, 100%, and just get a full runway. That's the key from what I can gather.
Okay.
Our final contestant today is a man who is playing the long game on the greatest hustle ever known to mankind. Darts isn't the real game, he shouts. Brexit down the pub, he complains. Behind closed doors, he's pounding arrows at the dartboard with every spare moment he's got. He will soon come out of his cave, bet his mate a fiver he can beat him at the very game he hates, and rake in the cash. Give it up for Jer, the real hustler, Gilroy.
There you go. That is playing the long hustle, all right.
If you had to do one thing to pass the time, would you pick Football Manager or darts?
A Football Manager. So my right. I think everybody misunderstood. Football Manager is crack cocaine. Like, everybody enjoys it, the first couple of hits.
You know? And what is darts then? heroin?
Yeah, I mean... This is your analogy, Owen.
I started the headline.
Yeah. No, I'm not saying that darts is heroin. Maybe it's like some benzos you'd buy off somebody on the boardwalk kind of thing. You know, like, why would anybody at this point be embracing darts? That now in time, we'll be like, oh, welcome along to the National Virtual Darts brought to you by Off the Ball.
Hey, Joe, what's that number?
0879-180-180.
Okay. Beautiful. As ever, the format is the classic crappy quiz with a series of questions on different themes, and then it's onto the slip inside of trivia, which is the rapid fire round. You can podcast the crappy quiz on offtheball.com or on the Go Loud app. Give us 5 out of 5, even if you hate us. And please send any questions you have via Twitter DM to me or to at offtheball, because postcards aren't safe at the moment. No post this week, obviously, but we did get a comment from Canty250199 on YouTube, who suggested a Reeling in the Years quiz. Well, Canty250199, thank you for getting in touch. That is a fantastic idea. We're going to start it off today with a quiz on 1999. So I think, Tommy, really, you're at an automatic disadvantage there straight away.
I was in first year in college, so I'm at a massive disadvantage.
First year, well, you know, at least you were alive and kicking.
The year literally passed first me year, by.
All right, I was in fourth year, so I also don't remember that much about this.
I still had an American accent; hadn't moved home to Ireland yet.
I was thinking that it's astonishing. We'll see how you get on. Round one is the boring questions round. Never multiple choice.
Can I ask a question? This is my proper first Zoom. So when people are WhatsApping me, do the WhatsApps come up on your screen, and can you all read them?
Yeah, you're supposed to put your phone on Do Not Disturb.
No, we can't read them. You can't read them.
Can you read them?
No, we cannot see what's coming up on your screen.
you're saying that with your usual twinkle in your eye there, and I'm like, is he lying to me? Is this like...
I would love it. I would love it if it could be a situation where we could see whatever is going on everybody's phone here, but not the case. Similarly, you can't see what comes up on my laptop, so we're all safe here. Question one for you, Tommy. Tommy, Meath got revenge for 1990 in 1999, beating Cork in the All-Ireland Football Final. Now, like 9 years previously, Cork went into the match having already won the Hurling All-Ireland. So Teddy McCarthy was the man who won both medals in 1990, and there was one Cork hurler set to do the double in 99 until Meath came along and scuppered his dream. Who was it?
Was it perhaps Sean O'Gohalpin?
Correct. Good answer. Sean Oak was the man indeed. Question one for you, Nathan. 99 saw Tiger Woods win his second ever major, beating Sergio Garcia by one stroke to win the US PGA Championship. At which course?
Oakmont?
No. Anyone?
Winged Foot?
No. Medina.
Hazeltine?
One of those. One of those.
Pebble Beach?
It comes within the first 10 guesses, usually. Question one for you, Jer.
Who Medina. Won the last...
who won the last ever Five Nations taking place in 99?
Bollocks. France.
No, Scotland. It was the 90s.
Wow.
Round two. Oh, there goes Nathan. Round two is okay. The 21 years later, they're still banging on about it. Round, how are you, Nathan?
Sorry. Hold on. I'm back.
See, they did the whole peeking in the door thing, but just, then just opened the door wide.
Right, okay. That,
and
that,
left it open.
That can not go viral, tell them. They cannot make
Nathan
any cash money
at all. He doesn't actually have any kids. He lives on his own.
No, I've made it all up.
Round two is the 21 years later, they're still banging on about it round. In this round, we will ask you questions about Manchester United's treble, which, of course, still lives on in the memory. A Manchester United fan might have told you in recent weeks that this is a thing that Liverpool Football Club could not achieve this year. Question two for you, Tommy. Manchester United were drawn in the group of death in the 98-99 Champions League. Can you name two of the other sides in their group?
No, this is a time when there was two groups in the Champions League, isn't it?
Don't know. What?
All right, okay. Barcelona?
Correct.
Bayern Munich?
Not correct. Did you get the third one?
Dynamo Moscow?
No, Brøndby was the other one. The three Bs. Bayern, Barcelona, Brøndby. Question two for you, Nathan.
I got it right, though. It's all
you
matters.
Did. You certainly did. 1 point.
Well done.
Two points clear. Question for you, Nathan. Who scored Bayern Munich's goal in the 1999 Champions League final? Hat tip to Alan Doherty, by the way, on Twitter, who suggested this question.
Memo Scholl?
No.
Who was it?
Mario Basler.
Oh.
There goes another microphone in the Murphy households. Mario Basler scored with Bayern Munich 1-0 up on that occasion. Jer, which Arsenal player provided the assist for Ryan Giggs when he scored his incredible solo goal in extra time of that FA Cup semi-final?
Ah, here. What do you mean? What do you mean? Who gave him the ball?
Who gave him the ball?
That's the stupidest question of all time.
I can picture it. It's
quite famous.
I can see it.
He gets the ball on the left.
Tick tock.
Left side midfield. Oh, I don't know. Freddie Ljungberg?
No. Who was it?
Lee
lads?
Dixon.
Mark Keown?
No.
Lee Dixon, no.
Dennis Bergkamp?
No. Oh, I thought this was easy, but clearly it's not.
You're a clown. That's a ridiculous question.
Patrick Vieira gave the ball away. Passes it across. I don't know who he's trying to find. And Ryan Giggs nips on in and then darts past eight players back of the net. Thought it was like
yeah,
one
exactly.
Of the most
darts past
ago.
Eight players. Yeah, it is. Not the ball. That's a real Arsenal fan.
The moment wouldn't have happened without Patrick Vieira. Moment wouldn't have happened without Patrick. I thought it was quite famous. Round three is the 1999 Rugby World Cup round, focusing on a time when, of course, we were bad at Rugby World Cup. Oh, wait. Question three for you, Tommy. Much like 2019, some of the warm-up games for the 1999 Rugby World Cup didn't exactly instill confidence in that Ireland team. Which Irish province beat Ireland less than a month before the World Cup started in 1999?
Ooh. Ulster.
No. Munster.
What?
It was just a guess.
It's the stupidest answer of all time.
I thought it was a stupid question, so I thought there had to
it
be
can
a stupid
only be,
answer.
It can only be Leinster or Munster. It's a 50-50 question. A ridiculous 50-50 question after I was asked who passed Brian Giggs the ball.
I didn't think it could be that ridiculous. It was ridiculous. I didn't think it could be that ridiculous.
And also, if any problems is like known to bang on about a result, two decades down the line. It's probably going to be Munster as well, Tommy. So
I haven't heard them talk about that.
They don't need to be All Blacks.
Have they ever beaten any other national side?
No, I don't think so. No, it's never happened. Nathan, who was Ireland's top try scorer at the 99 Rugby World Cup? Was it A, Brian O'Driscoll, B, Keith Wood, or C, Conor O'Shea?
A, B, or C here, I noticed.
How come I didn't get multiple choice?
What did he say, Nathan?
Yeah. I said, do I not like that? 1999 World Cup, like it was a shit show, but we must have beaten somebody well.
You know, I think Nathan's repeating the question because he's got his Google Home operating under here.
And Alexa, like, who was Ireland's top try scorer? Let me see if this works.
Okay, Google.
Maybe it's not a trick question. Brian O'Driscoll.
No. It's Keith Woods. He scored four tries against the USA. And that was his loss for the thing. Jer.
Yes.
The disaster against Argentina obviously happened in the city of Lens, but can you name the stadium in which it happened? Was it A, Stade Félix Boller, B, Stade de la Beaujolais, or C, Stade Geoffroy Guichard?
Can you just read those for me again?
Stade Félix Boller, Stade de la Beaujolais, and Stade Geoffroy Guichard. One of the three of them, Jer. Quite simple. A, B, or C?
C.
No, it's A, Stade Félix Boller. Well, that was a pretty pathetic inning so far. Jer on 0 points, Nathan on 0 points, Tommy in the lead on 2 points, and a round in which he had a different accent. 6 years old, whatever age you were for the duration of 1999. This is appalling stuff from the two dads in the room.
Well, I was also on 0 points in the last quiz, and I don't think Tommy needs reminding that I stormed home.
So yeah, you got easy questions. Yet.
You absolutely romped home. Round four is the other stuff that's not sport that happened in 1999 too round. So replacing the fun free magic number round for 1 week and 1 week only is the fun filled round of questions that aren't to do with sport to test the full breadth of your nostalgic knowledge.
Do we need a pen and paper?
No. This is the whole thought process behind a pen and paper over Zoom proved complicated for a few people last week.
But are there 3 points on offer in this round?
No.
What?
No.
That completely changes the whole quiz.
The entire fabric.
Just for 1 week only.
What's the point in having the bloody thing if we're just going to keep changing things? Like, the whole thing is you can start slowly and work your way into it.
Well, you can come back in the rapid fire round, Nathan. That's always where you do your best
it's
work.
It's far more difficult to come back in the rapid fire. If you haven't, like I did last time, won the
you're bottling this. We understand that's
free
going on
magic
here.
Number round.
Yeah, but let's not forget that Owen made a horrendous mistake by asking the wrong question and phrasing it wrong in the last one.
But it's also time to wrestle away a bit of control from Nathan Murphy in this. The sort of double points nonsense that goes on when you get lucky on one particular question, you're just allowed to race back into proceedings or race ahead. We've had enough of that, so we'll see how this goes. Tommy, question four for you.
How many questions did we get here? Just one.
One. It's a regular round. Regular round of questions.
That's dull. Like, this is meant to be an exciting quiz on.
Well, like, let's see what happens.
People wait for this.
I think you did a great job, Owen. Remember this when it comes.
My question, please.
Let's
see
what happens.
It's like doing Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and just skipping five of the questions. Like,
it's actually not. It's actually far more akin to Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You don't get to skip two rungs in the ladder for like one question on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And this is what the crappy quiz has descended into. Can't be allowing this sort of farce to sneak into things. We'll bring it back next time for you, Nathan. Do we have a deal?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, not for me. Not for me, for the viewers and the listeners.
But we'll see how you get on here. Tommy, 1999 was the year music downloading service Napster was launched. Its founder, Sean Parker, was played by whom in the 2010 film The Social Network?
Oh, come on.
Justin Timberlake.
Correct.
Oh,
well
come
done.
On.
He wasn't even born, Jer.
3-0.
Come on.
He wasn't even born, and he's getting these questions correct.
He was born when The Social Network came out.
Doesn't matter. Question four. That was actually supposed to be a question for Tommy to get him back. You know, get one on the board there after the two lads who've been around and are basically adults in 1999 had stormed away from him, but not to be. Question four for you, Nathan. Name the artist behind these lyrics from a 1999 hit single. The reason I breathe is you, boy, you got me blinded. Oh, pretty baby, There's nothing that I wouldn't do. It's not the way I planned it. Show me how you want it to be.
Can you say them again?
Of course
no,
I can.
No.
Does he have to sing the line?
The reason no,
he does not have to say
you,
no hints.
Boy, you got me blinded. Oh, pretty baby.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. I know what this is. I know what this is.
What have we got? Just the artists that I need.
Britney Spears, Hit Me Baby One More Time.
Correct. Nathan Murphy is off the mark. Not so boring now, is it, Nathan, when you've got your Britney Spears knowledge being tapped into?
Well, I still only got one question.
Exactly.
Whereas
exactly.
I could have got 3 points.
And it's going to be a far more exciting rapid fire round because you don't have that platform
anymore.
There
was a cheesy DJ in the flesh pots of Galway at this point, playing that again and again and again on loop in the desperate hope of somebody coming up and cooing in his eyes. And
careful now. Careful now.
He's in his family home. But still, go
what
on.
What was
Nathan.
Your DJ name? What was your DJ name, Nathan?
I didn't have a DJ name. You know, the Nathan Murphy name just was a DJ name in itself.
It was the Nathan Murphy experience.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought many people got to experience it, mind you.
Can I? Oh, bloody hell, he's gone in two-footed. Can I just say I have an extremely competitive six-year-old outside the door who, if I emerge from this having not won, is going to be very upset. Well, I will have let him down massively.
That's on you for actually telling them what you're doing. I mean,
Nathan, you're a male man. Nathan, you're a male man. Teach him how to lose gracefully, pal.
Oof.
Rightly so. Like, if I was that six-year-old, I'd be disappointed too. Question four.
We did a classic game club. Sorry, very briefly. We did a classic game club on the All-Ireland final from 2014 hurling match. And the one thing that I meant to say was that it reminded me most of was Mayo. the two on goals. The two missed penalties. Excuse me, I'm on the telly. We're broadcasting here. Could you please leave? Come on, I'll see you. Go on.
Right. You're dead right. No. Don't leave.
She can help you out with this question.
This is the greatest test of parenting of all time. How stern can he be without looking like a complete bollocks?
I'm not going to be stern at all. I'm just going to tickle.
Now, question for you. Maybe your kid has seen Fight Club. Fight Club came out in 1999. Name Brad Pitt's character. Gimme.
Thanks very much. Brad Pitt's character was called.
Oh, that's a good question.
It's long. 21 years is a long time. What did he say?
I haven't a clue.
Nathan.
I can't think of it.
Tyler Durden.
Yeah.
So no, tip of my tongue there. Justin Timberlake or Tyler Durden? Equal questions.
Jura, you're on 0 points. Nathan, you've got to yourself off the mark on one. Tommy in the lead on 3 points when he was like five. Could you walk at this point? Like, I mean, you were just getting to know the world and already you had a better sporting knowledge than the other two people in this quiz. Absolutely incredible. Okay, we are on to the final. Our winner tonight will be decided in the round that separates the men from the boys, the Roy Keanes from the Roy Orbisons. It is an old team in particular, ridiculously easy rapid fire round. So the score you get in this round will be added to your scores in the previous round. There will be 40 seconds for everyone to answer from the same set of questions. So we're going to start the highest number of points, the person with the highest number of points, that's you, Tommy. Then onto the person in second, that is you, Nathan. And then onto the person with the lowest number of points, that is you, Nathan. If you get a question correct, I'll ask you another question and keep asking until you get one wrong.
What's the scores?
Never mind. Yeah, keep going. Don't let them distract you.
Once you get a question wrong, I move on to the next person. And your incorrect answer means a deduction of 1 point. Tommy, are you ready?
What's the order?
Second.
I'm ready.
Then Jerry, let me just get my stopwatch out just to ensure that nobody's going to be cheating through this because there's a lot at stake here. There's going to be a lot of complaining, I dare say, if this doesn't go Nathan's way. Right, Tommy, you ready? 40 seconds starts now. True or false, there hasn't been a lower scoring All-Ireland hurling final since the 1999 hurling final.
True.
Correct. Who finished second to Manchester United in the 98-99 Premier League table?
Arsenal.
Correct. Who did Cork beat in the 99 hurling All-Ireland final?
Kilkenny.
Correct. Who won more tennis majors in 99, Venus or Serena Williams?
Venus.
No, Serena. Who was the overall top try scorer at the 99 Rugby World Cup, Nathan?
John Loomer.
Correct. Who knocked the All Blacks out of the tournament?
Australia.
No, France. Jer, who won the 99 Cricket World Cup, Australia or Pakistan?
Pakistan.
No, Australia. Tommy, who won? Who named Ireland's rugby team manager in 1999? Last question.
Rugby team manager. I don't know.
Don Lennon. That doesn't matter anyway. Tommy, you
were the
winner.
Where's Murphy gone?
Where's Nathan gone? Stormed out. His family are upset with him. He has let everybody down, by all accounts, which is a shame. But there is always another opportunity to come back. The absence of the rapid fire round, or the absence of the numbers round, clearly screwed him over. Now we realise why he's had an iron grip on this whole thing.
Bullshit.
Typical me, old man.
Tommy, good victory loser. Speech. Who do you want to thank?
Victory speech. Owen, you passed a couple of comments earlier on that I was only 6 years old in 1999 and that perhaps the lads should have perhaps won it, given that they were in college. 1999 was the year I was formed as a sports fan. Mead won the All-Ireland, Manchester United won the treble. That was history from there on in. No, so you couldn't have given me an easier quiz.
Ever since.
Is there an asterisk beside this quiz? Because it wasn't a proper crappy quiz, because you totally changed one of the rounds.
No chance.
One of the most important rounds. How's about you stick to the quiz?
Week, 1-1.
Just because you're good at like guessing, like random shot in the dark sort of rapid fire numbers,
no,
or whatever you call it.
Shot in the dark. Like the quiz is the quiz. Just leave the quiz as it is.
It's good to have our democracy back and to have a more egalitarian society. Jared, Tommy, Nathan, thanks a million. We will see you next time at the Crappy Quiz.
Well done, Tommy.
Cheers, lads.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. Off the ball. Salah takes a shot.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.